It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. From Giant Bomb, Jeff Gerstmann is here. Larry Magid from CBS. Natalie Morris, too. We're going to talk about the Xbox One announcement. Who is Xbox One for? And something called Paleo Nostalgia. A nostalgia for a time before technology. Should we be paying more attention to our children or less? It's all next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT This Week in Tech, episode 407, recorded May 26th, 2013, Paleo Nostalgia. This Week in Tech is brought to you by ShareFile.com. Enhance your workflow, send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter TWiT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Visit audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, visit squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT5. And by Go to Assist from Citrix. Take control of your IT world from one simple cloud-based platform. Provide live or unattended support for all your users anywhere. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com and use the promo code TWIT. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover your week's tech news. We've got a great panel for you, starting all the way to my right with Natalie Morris, who's here from CNET, CBS, and her brand new show, Crash Test Mom.
That's right. I'm not with CNET anymore, though.
Are you CBS, CNET, I'm confused. I don't know. Everybody else here is with CBS.
Right. I left CNET in April of 2009. So.
Holy cow, has it been that long?
No, not much. 2011, sorry.
It's been two years. Wow.
That's great. But my new show is sort of CNET meets, you know, parenting stuff. So we do product review for parenting.
That's neat. Cool. Crash Test Mom.
CrashTestMom.com. You know, when I was 6 months pregnant with my first, I came on your show and I said, how do I choose a stroller? I don't know what to do. I was so confused. And I found that a lot of people had that problem. So I put my product testing background to work for me and we launched CrashTestMom.com. And so we take strollers and we really, you know.
What's the best stroller nowadays? What do you use?
Right now I'm on the Quinny's app. I really like that one.
This is so amazing. Now my kids now are 18 and 21. But the stroller, and I thought the stroller technology back then was pretty sophisticated. Amazing. I see pictures now of friends' strollers, and it's amazing.
Origami. Look at the origami that we review on the site is robotic. So it unfolds and unfolds robotically.
That's the one.
It'll watch the first few seconds and it unfolds
that
itself.
That is bizarre.
It's got a pedometer. It's got a cell phone charger.
Wow. Who used the cell phone? You or the kid?
That is crazy.
Yeah, it's really crazy. The problem is that we took it out in New York City and it unfolding on its own right there.
But what you don't want it is to fold up with a kid in it.
Well, it won't.
Oh my God, that's creepy.
Amazing.
That is just creepy.
It's the airplane autopilot.
Is there a motor in it or is that just like pneumatics?
It is, but it's powered by you can charge it electronically, powered by your motion. So every time you walk,
can the kid drive it himself, or do you actually are you still in charge? No.
It has daytime running lights.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's $900.
We've got. Yeah, I'm not surprised.
So the thing is, you know, this show we write it for moms, but really, I'm used to doing product testing for guys. My normal audience are dudes. So I kind of do it for the guys at the same time. Because I know that especially strollers, it's usually the mom is that there's Clayton with that's the daddy approval on there. Because usually.
Oh my God, that thing's heavy. This is great. This is really, this is well done.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks.
It's very professionally produced. It's not just me in my basement with some strollers. I have a really good team.
This show is me in my basement.
A woman gets pregnant and, you know, then she's researching diapers and nursery and stuff. And it's usually the strollers are relegated to the dad. And the woman says, figure this out. And then the men get so crazy about it and they go all CNET on it. Like, okay.
Right.
Titanium alloy, what do we need? You know, so I get a lot of people like that. So now we're putting them to the test. Like I said.
Bell.
This thing is crazy. That is a crazy stroller.
Isn't
wow. Anyway, great to have you, Natalie.
Thank you for being here.
Also with us, Giant Bomb himself, Jeff Gerstmann. It's so nice to have you. You live in Petaluma. We got to have you on more.
But I'm on the east side. We have to rumble.
We got gang signs.
That's right. It's all this whole thing.
Jeff, the last time he was here, danced with a slow dance with Brian Brushwood.
It's true, and I haven't come back. It's taken me that long to kind of
We try not to think about it.
Yeah, dark days.
Anyway, great to have you. Giant Bomb is a great place to go for video game reviews, and of course, because the Xbox One came out, we thought it'd be great to have you this week talk a little bit about what you think and see. They're also here, Larry Magid from CBS Radio. Good to have you, Larry.
Good to be here, Leo.
Boy, we got a great panel. Going to have a lot of fun today. Let's talk about the Xbox One. Microsoft had its reveal on the 21st. And, it's interesting to watch what Sony did with PlayStation 4 and contrast it to what Microsoft did with the Xbox One. First, the name. Good name?
I like the name. It's a little confusing because that's what people call the first Xbox.
Right.
The Xbox 360 was the second one because they didn't want to be putting out the Xbox 2 when Sony was putting out the PlayStation 3. So they had to come up with a bunch of goofy names.
Some of the names were just like Xbox 720, terrible names.
Yeah, that's just dumb.
And then Xbox Infinity kind of leaves you no room for growth.
Right. And, you know, Disney has a product coming out, you know, in a couple of months here called Infinity, a game. So, you know, it clashes.
One, I think, is the right name. I think you're right.
Yeah, I mean, it ties into everything they're saying about the system. You know, their whole thing is like, it's your all-in-one entertainment experience, and it plays TV shows and program data and all this other stuff. So, you know, for their pitch... I think the name makes a whole lot of sense.
Actually, we should show. Do you have Chad? Is this it? The 1 minute Xbox One
TV experience. TV.
Yeah.
TV and movies. TV. Xbox. Watch TV. TV.
Because they did it at 10 a.m. Of course.
Price is right.
Was on.
TV. Watch TV.
Fine CBS
TV.
Program.
TV. TV remote. TV experience. TV.
The funny thing is, every time he talked to the Sports Xbox TV. One, people were watching on their Xbox. Anybody? 360 with Kinect, it would turn itself off.
Exactly.
It listened.
TV. Xbox, go home.
TV. TV, TV, TV.
Sports.
There was a whole sports.
Television. Television, TV, television.
Television, television. Television.
My favorite line.
TV, TV.
Here it comes.
Xbox is about to become the next water cooler.
Ooh, there's a selling point.
Television, it's got a spigot on the side. It just dispenses. You just walk right up to it, get the water out.
Halo television series.
Television, TV, sport.
Television, TV.
TV, TV, TV.
For Call of Duty.
Entirely new Call of Duty for the next generation. Call of Duty.
One of the fascinating new additions to your squad is a dog. This is someone you care about. Call of Duty. All of the new story element. Call of Duty. Our new dog model is taken from...
I mean, that dog has to die at the end, right?
Better not.
Like the whole thing.
Call of Duty. Xbox, go home.
And boy, when they ended that, it just ended. There was no goodbye.
Right.
Boom, well, it was over.
It was a tight hour for TV. It was on Spike TV.
Mm-hmm. So we learned about Xbox One, I think, to a pretty good degree. They didn't talk much about games, but they left that for E3, which is
right.
In 2 weeks.
You know, Sony announced a while ago, so they kind of were able to have both sides of the message. You know, talking to Microsoft, I was up there for that and sat in the front row to watch that. Awesome presentation.
I'm sorry about the post-traumatic stress syndrome of showing you that again.
It was a little shocking, revisiting it so soon. but, to hear them tell it, interviewing them and talking to them, this was the They even said, literally, this is the half of our E3 press conference that no one likes. You know, they wanted to get out and say, like, here's the stuff about what the platform is so that they can save E3 for games.
At E3, it's all about titles. It's all about what titles
do you
have?
It better be. They dug themselves a deep enough hole.
On the TV side, how does it work? Is it actually going to have, like, a cable card in there?
No. It has a HDMI in. Okay. So it'll control, if you have a new enough box, it'll control your DVR.
So it doesn't matter who you're
That's the key, and Nilay Patel brought this up on The Verge. We've seen these pass-throughs before. Microsoft even did it with Web TV.
Yeah.
Google did it with Google TV. The problem is controlling the set-top box.
Right.
And most of these crappy Motorola set-top boxes from your cable company, you need an IR blaster.
So they have a connector for IR blasters if you have an older box. It's a
terrible experience.
It's horrible.
So is it a mistake for Microsoft to do this as a pass-through? I mean, if you have a modern box, it's great.
On one hand, I think that maybe they're trying to control the way people watch TV so that next time around, by the time TV doesn't matter anymore, it'll be you're used to seeing Microsoft controlling your television watching experience. But I look at that thing and I just think I barely watch any TV. And when I do, it's all through a DVR. So, you know, it felt like they weren't really out there saying, you know, they did say specifically, even though this has a hard drive in it, it will not be a DVR.
No DVR, 500 gig hard drive.
DVR, but it could
control your DVR.
Yeah, well, theoretically control your DVR. But they were talking more about program guides and being able to walk up to your Kinect and say, Xbox, turn on the Sci-Fi channel. But who?
But can you?
Yeah. Yes.
If you can talk to your set-top box.
Yeah. Well, yes. Well, it'll talk to either through an IR blaster or through HDMI.
For integration with, they want that for integration of live events, though. Mm-hmm. Like you're saying, they don't want to do very many live events. But think about watching a sports event while having your fantasy information.
Right. I love that idea.
But they already stream NFL games over, they have the NFL app on PlayStation. Like you can already get all the sports
and
apps.
And the rumor
and
is DirecTV, which is just providing that through Sunday Ticket, is the contract's up and that it will be now available for more than just PlayStation. I suspect you'll see that on Xbox.
Yeah.
That's a selling point. It's a slice, but it's a big slice. NFL fans who want to be able to watch the game and then get stats on the side. Right. I think that's a selling point.
But at the same time, you know, I think when we talk about television at large, when we move away from kind of the live sports stuff, do people really identify with networks? Like who goes like, I want to watch Comedy Central. It's like, no, they want to watch the show that they have already recorded.
But that's the promise of this. The promise of this is I could say, Xbox, play CSI Las Vegas. It would know where that is and would play it.
Which was the purpose of Google TV, remember?
Yeah, it didn't work on Google TV.
That's not that difficult to do now. Like that, I wonder, you know, they talk about like, oh, you don't have, one of their big things was, you know, you don't have to change the input on your TV. That's so hard. Like, is it really that
hard? It struck
me
as a solution in search of a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a DVR. I've got a Roku. They work pretty well. Same way I feel about Apple TV. I'm trying to imagine how it's going to change.
I think it is a problem.
Hard if you're my parents or my in-laws, they can never get it.
Never going to buy an Xbox.
They call this the babysitter problem. It's when the parents come. It's when Verna comes over and wants to watch her show.
And so if we leave and go to the movies, we say, well, if you want to watch something live, push this input and that input. So she doesn't get it when she's here. She will never buy this product, though. So it solves something for her, but it's not the product for her.
I think it is a solution. I think we have too many HDMI inputs. It means you have to go out and buy a switcher or an AV receiver. It becomes complicated. You've got four remote controls on the sofa arm, and it's hard. And exactly, how do you tell the babysitter how to watch a show?
Well, if it's going to work for the babysitter who doesn't live in your house.
What we do for our babysitters is give them the Wi-Fi password, and then they
watch on the computer.
Right.
Right, yeah.
But it has to be drop-dead, easy interface. It just works, and you have to be able to get into it. So the problem in my house is figuring out which HDMI channel to set your television on.
Well, this solves that because you turn on the TV and it's there.
Theoretically. It's all there, maybe.
Yeah, I guess. Like that's yes. There's a functional. There is a use case there. I just wonder how wide that use case is. Is it enough for them to spend a full hour talking about that sort of stuff at the expense of?
Well, thus the moniker. I mean, they named their baby after this, so they think it's that important.
Right. The point somebody made, I think it was Brian Brushwood on our broadcast of the event, was you're putting out something that's got to last 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a real challenge because what is the TV watching world going to look like 10 years from now? What is the gaming world going
to
look like?
If we're still watching television through some separate box that has to
be
HDMI into a device in 10 years, someone screwed up.
Yeah.
Like that's
everything will be internet within 5 years, right?
Sure. I would hope. You know, everything can be internet now, if you just about everything, if you try hard enough.
Yeah, because your babysitter just flips open her laptop. Everything she wants to see is there.
You know, my kids don't even have television sets.
Right. So,
you know, not going to get them very excited. So, I got a Wii. I can't even give it to my kids.
So really what you're seeing... Don't give it to me either, I got to tell you right now. What we're seeing is a transitional device that's getting us through this very rocky period now. Yeah. We're going from broadcast television to cable television to internet television.
And if we eventually get to that point where it is a la carte or you know, if you're just buying shows one-off or however that ends up working, I guess you know you could argue that Microsoft has covered their bases.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're dealing with the now problem. They are prepared for the future problem.
Right. And there's nothing to say they can't add DVR capability.
That's true. They already have a hard drive in there. They will support external drives through a USB 3 port on the box. So, you know, you can size up if you like. But all the games need to be installed to the hard drive to run. And, you know, those are going to come on Blu-rays. Those are not going to be small downloads.
That's an interesting point.
What I'm curious about is this game sharing capability as well. Like, you won't be able to take a game to your friend's house and just play it. Like, hey, I got the new Call of Duty, or you have to sign into your avatar in order to play that. That seems a bit like a buzzkill, especially with the teens.
Yeah, I mean, they're completely redoing the way that they credential access to games. You won't be able to put a disc in and play it. It has to install to the hard drive. So at that point, you have to be logged into an account, enter a serial number. They're making it more like the PC, which has been that way for a very long time.
But even worse, because apparently it'll recognize you, right?
I don't know if it's your voice or your camera. Do the camera recognize your face so it can automatically log you into an account?
Hi, Jeff. I'll log you in.
Right.
Same Xbox Live account. Multiple members can use it. Multiple family members can use it.
Theoretically.
So we'll have to steal your face. Gattaca style.
Exactly. I have to take my face off.
It'd be funny if people walk in with a picture in front of them of Dad so they could play.
Well, it had to be 3D depth because it's a depth camera.
Right.
So they can play Dad's games. Yeah.
Right. So that's raised a lot
really
of concerns.
Cob about it. Really body parts off of Dad if you really
what happened? Well, that's all the best sci-fi is about, cutting people's hands off and putting them on fingerprint scanners. Like, we're finally going to get to that point.
I got
to
be honest. If my son can't get me through the first 20 levels of a game, I don't know what I'm going to do. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's
how I play. Henry sits down, gets me into the game, and then I'd say, I'll take it from here.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the big problems people are stumbling over with this stuff is related to that access to games and how impacts used games.
Used games. Now, Paul Theron on Windows Weekly said that Microsoft confirmed later that there will be a mechanism for selling used games. They are not going to eliminate that market.
Right, but so that was the really fun thing about that whole day up at Microsoft is so they had that event in the morning, and then from there, all the media there was doing different interviews with different people, you know, Phil Harrison, Phil Spencer,
collecting
all these
information.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, you start comparing notes with people, or actually about midday, the message has completely gotten lost to where you have some people saying there will be a fee that you have to pay to access to use a used game.
Right.
Other people saying there won't be a fee. Then they eventually put their heads together and said, we're not talking about that right now. Like, you already did.
Too late.
Wow. So, you know, what is that used fee? If the disk is literally just a fast download and the data on it is useless once you've separated it from that key, it holds no value. You can't go into a GameStop and buy it for, you know, why would you be able to walk into a GameStop and buy that for any cheaper than they would just sell it to you digitally from the box itself? So I think that's the worry is that, yes, there will be some sort of access fee like the online pass system that's been used in some games over the past couple of years. But that fee will just end up being the entire cost of the game.
Major Nelson was the guy who was trying to explain all of this. You have your article from Patrick Klepek.
He kind of put out some, you know, he does some of their kind of community blogging type stuff and puts out some messaging.
The ability to trade in and resell games is important to gamers and Xbox. It's designed to support the trade in and resale of games. We will disclose more information in the future. What they're not disclosing is if there's an additional fee.
Right.
Although some said there would not be.
Yeah, some said there wouldn't be. Some said there definitely would be.
Oh, that's interesting.
And others said that fee would just be go buy a copy of the game.
Right.
They didn't have their messaging straight, which, you know, that's tied together with the always online narrative that formed in the months leading up to this, which the reality is not quite as bad as that, but you still have to check in. You have to connect your Xbox to the internet once every 24 hours if you want to continue playing games.
Just a heartbeat, though. We don't have to be on all the time.
Yes, exactly. You don't have to be on all the time, which, you know, for most people,
that's fine.
Who cares?
Right.
But
what if you're out in your cabin in the woods?
Totally. Exactly.
What do you do?
You know,
there?
What if you're, you know, Steam, I believe, is 30 days on the PC, which that's more than enough time to finish a game and, you know, without buying it and all that other stuff. So I understand why they want to restrict it.
Unless you're the Unabomber. in which case
this could all change as usage. You know, people use it and they go, I guess we need to make this a longer hard.
Right. I mean, I look at you know, there are a lot of fighting game tournaments. There's one happening out in Chicago right now that they, you know, 1,000 people get together in a hotel ballroom and compete at fighting games for a weekend. And you know, there's Evo in July, like the big kind of worldwide fighting tournament. Like, there's a lot of side games that happen in hotel rooms and money matches and all this other stuff. But hotel internet is not compatible with consoles. It's never, right. You know, so the idea of bringing your Xbox there, then, you know, are people rigging up their, you know, 4G hotspots just so they can get that heartbeat, yeah. So they can keep playing, because, you know, otherwise you're locked out completely.
Hotel internet is barely compatible with web browsing.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I see very real problems with that where, you know, even... I think 24 hours is too short, and I almost wonder if they put that out there as an extreme case just to get people to freak out so they can back off of it later. Because I think they want something more like, and ideally it wouldn't exist, but, you know, if we're talking about a world where you need to credential that stuff, 7 days is a little more reasonable. 72 hours, something like that.
Three operating systems. It'll be x86 at the kernel. They didn't say Windows 8. They just said Windows.
Right.
But of course it's Windows 8.
It is based on Windows 8, but it's not, it doesn't, you know, you don't access the Windows 8 app store. So it'll be a separate app store. It's all that
stuff.
Yeah,
and then Windows 8 is, it's like, even as bad as, right. It's based, yeah, on the Windows Vista kernel. Yeah. You all love that so much.
Bring that back.
Well, so, but Windows, it's 8. A Windows kernel, and the Hyper-V in between, which is their virtualization,
yeah,
technology. Yeah. And because they're using x86, those context switches will be very quick. And then on top of it is an Xbox gaming OS.
Right, and that'll let them set up scenarios where you're on a group video call in Skype while you're playing a game.
See,
or
I
watching
love that.
A movie or something like that.
And the camera that comes with the built-in, it's not built-in, but the equipped Kinect is a high-def camera. Mm-hmm. I can imagine gamers, you know, they do TeamSpeak now, things like that. Or even use Xbox Live to talk to each other, having a video.
I think you won't see a lot of that, though, because, you know, it's the anonymity is a big part of what makes voice chat work in games.
You mean you're actually 11?
Yeah.
No, so, I'm not. That's it.
I mean, they've had a camera. They haven't had camera support.
Right, nobody uses it
in games like that. Yeah. No one. You know, no one really wants to use that while they're playing games.
Because
they're too busy shouting racist, horrible,
exactly,
things at you.
You don't want
to, like, go pull over. Okay, what does this jerk look like? Like,
oh, he's a kid.
Okay, little kid. Yeah. Figures.
Can I ask a stupid question? Why would you need Skype on top of that then, if you already have the ability to chat in video chat inside a game?
It's simply because they can have compatibility with the full Skype network, and you can have video calls with your parents who don't have, right, an Xbox.
Skype,
and,
you know, it's owned by Microsoft. Yeah. So
watch you play Call of Duty.
No. The camera watches you, and you're watching. You're watching.
Come on, you know Clayton's going to want to do
you're
this.
You're not paying attention to what is being said on the Skype call anyway, or, you know, multitasking. It's very big.
You can watch a movie with your parents.
I get it. All right.
You can watch a movie with your parents. It'd be fun.
I mistakenly thought that when you're playing a game, you're singularly focused. Sorry.
You were right. I think that's what Jeff's saying.
Totally are.
Nobody wants to see the other.
Yeah,
guy.
And it's basically a version of the Windows 8 Snap stuff. Like, they just, right, call it Snap. You know, you, right, can. Snap Skype into the corner.
Wouldn't it be desirable? You buy it for a game machine, maybe you buy it a little bit for the video, but having built-in high-def Skype and a microphone, and it's kind of designed to be used with a television, would that be a selling point for?
Yeah. I think that, I'm sorry, I didn't understand. He mentioned Skype along with video games, and I didn't understand why you would want to do the thing simultaneously. But yes, I do think that video chat on a real TV, I guess, is desirable.
Well, or another scenario for your fantasy football draft. Maybe you're gonna have everybody.
Of course, Logitech has had a Skype,
right,
device.
They have it just like that.
For quite a while.
But it's $200.
Yeah.
I want to say my Panasonic TV might just have a Skype app built in.
Yes, it does.
A USB web.
It does, but you have to plug it at the camera.
Right.
I mean, Microsoft wants to put Skype everywhere, and I think it might happen. How much is this box going to be? They didn't say.
They haven't said. You know, they're
$499.
$499.
I think we're all agreed.
That's my guess there. $390. You know,
you can't charge $399. I don't think you can make it for $399. I mean, you can't charge more than $499.
No, if they go to $599, that's the Sony PS3 number that everyone laughs at and hates.
Right.
They can't go that high. So then that becomes the fun, you know, E3 is 3 weeks out or something, and I don't think we'll see prices there.
No.
But, you know.
Available this year, though.
Yep.
Available by Christmas.
Yeah, both platforms available this year.
Is this going to be the worst Christmas ever then? Like, you can't get any of these consoles? People are going to lose their lives over it like they did 10 years ago?
How will availability be?
It's you know, I think with a lot of these parts being relatively well, and Sony might have a bigger problem. They've got faster, what is it, GDDR5
RAM
in that thing that'll, you know, that'll be a little more expensive, maybe a little harder to source in quantity than Microsoft that doesn't have
Nothing fancy.
Nothing fancy. It's so it's a lot of kind of off the shelfy
AMD
sort of parts. Yeah,
yeah. They didn't say AMD, but we're all AMD has a system on a chip that
Microsoft didn't want to talk specs at all. So after the hour long thing, they did a 45-minute architecture panel, and they had guys out there that were legitimately architecting this next. Like they had the ponytails to prove it. They were serious people. But then they talked about, it's got 5 billion transistors in it.
Oh, come on.
And then there are transistors in the cloud, the future of gaming. It was just like, come on, don't get all techno-hippie on this. Like, let's talk numbers. And I think they didn't want to talk specific numbers because Sony has better numbers. The PlayStation 4 is going to be a more powerful box.
Interesting.
Than the Xbox One.
That's not a change, though. I mean, the PlayStation 3 had a cell processor. It was pretty sophisticated. Yeah.
The big difference is that the PlayStation 4 architecture is very similar, so they won't run into the problem that they had last time out, where it was just impossible to develop for the cell.
Right.
So
they're both x86.
Yeah,
people know how to develop for that.
Everyone already knows
process.
How to make games for that stuff. Yeah. It'll happen much more easily. So I think that'll help Sony on their games story a lot.
Natalie, is this going to be a battle at home? Or you'll just buy both of them?
Well, buy is a, you know, I mean, do we really need to buy? I guess we'll have it. We'll have them, I'm sure.
Clayton plays games, right?
But he likes a lot of the Arkham games. So, you know, a lot of times we'll have a tester product running through here for a little bit, and then we'll decide if we want to buy it or not.
Right.
So I'm sure we'll have it. And I like the idea of consolidating all of our set-top boxes, and we use Apple TV a lot. So the idea of having something that can do what the Apple TV does in a lot of ways.
Right.
There
you go.
There you go.
That's exactly the
answer. I can't imagine giving up my Roku. Among other things, I can watch your show on my Roku. I don't know if I'll be able to watch it on the Xbox or not.
It's an interesting story about that because developing an app for the Xbox is very expensive. Microsoft wants you to use certified developers, which we were told is about $150,000 to develop the app. And you can do what Revision 3 did, which have an in-house developer do it, and then go through the arduous certification process.
I believe that's what CBS did for the GameSpot app as well.
It's challenging because it may take months to get it certified. We think we found a friendly certified developer who's willing to do it
by the time you get that
less.
Done. So it sounds like they are going to change that for Xbox One.
Oh, good.
You know,
so we shouldn't
they did
even
say
bother.
It might be a little more open. Yeah. You know, it will. Because it is that Windows side of their 3OS approach, it should be easier to develop for that without getting debug hardware.
Because we see this as a absolute mandate is to make our the Twit network available on all of these boxes because that's how people would want to watch us, we presume.
Do you see this as a challenge to Apple TV and Roku and all the sort of standalone video products?
I think it catches up, and I think that you know the Xbox brand is huge. I mean, you know, they are the platform to beat, more or less. So I think that, you know, there are a lot of people out there that are, you know, from my perspective, like, I want a wide variety of games. So I look at that press conference and go, like, you talked about TV for half the time, then you mentioned Call of Duty. But at the same time, what are the most popular things? Sports games, Call of Duty, you know, NFL partnership for fantasy sports, that sort of stuff. Like, they're making this very, like,
broad
device.
And they'll have the exclusive titles. I mean, I think it's pretty clear now that console gaming is almost commoditized, where there's a handful of exclusive titles on each platform.
Right.
And then almost everybody else, including Call of Duty, is on both.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's not, you don't choose it by the exclusive titles as much. I mean, unless you're a Gears of War fanatic.
It's one of those things that happens very early in a generation's life cycle is those exclusive titles start to matter more. And because they need to sell boxes, Microsoft and Sony are a little bit more willing to open up the wallet and try to secure some stuff. But so far that's mostly been, add-on content, DLC, like download stuff for Call of Duty will debut on Xbox first and then eventually end up on the PlayStation
Hardly
4.
Enough to make you, unless you're, again, a total fanatic.
Right, but it sounds like we're kind of waiting until E3 for this to be confirmed, but it sounds like the next game from the original developers of Call of Duty that split off to form Respawn Entertainment, that may very well be exclusive to the Xbox One.
But Watch Dogs, which Sony made a big deal about at their PS4 announcement, it's going to be on
that'll
both.
Be everywhere.
It's going to be everywhere.
Ubisoft likes money, you know, and the co-marketing money they get from making it exclusive often
is not worth it
compared to what they would just sell by being out there on everything.
I thought it was very interesting that both Sony and Microsoft brought out developers that were in very few cases making exclusive games.
Right.
So you got Watch Dogs, but so do we. You got Call of Duty, but so do we. You got, most of these games, Madden's not going to be on one platform.
No, definitely not. There was a bit of a scare for a little bit that EA was, EA's already basically abandoned the Wii U.
Well, now if I were Nintendo, should I go back to making playing cards? Is it all over?
I think Nintendo has the handheld market sewn up, and the 3DS is a good device that
does
is
it still sell.
It's coming into its own game
really?
Wise.
Interesting.
It's starting to get the software support that it needs. The Vita is also becoming a little interesting.
That's the Sony.
The Sony handheld, because Sony is just pursuing a lot of smaller developers. So you're getting like these kind of artsy games that you wouldn't normally see on consoles at all.
That might be one differentiator. Microsoft didn't seem to be encouraging the independent developer.
No, there are Sony few here that, Sony, I mean, they rebuilt their entire developer relations approach. Not too long ago, and it's been working out pretty well for them. Whereas I think you see the situation being flipped, whereas going into the PlayStation 3, Sony was very arrogant. They were coming off the PlayStation 2. They were huge. They didn't have, the Xbox floundered. They didn't have to worry about anything. This time, Sony took its lumps. They've gone back to the drawing board. They're trying to figure it out, and they're being much easier to approach and much easier to work with, whereas, some of the developers I talked to are saying that Microsoft is in that exact same situation that Sony was, where they're very arrogant. They're like, you need to come to us. We're not going to come to you.
Yeah, it's got to be a Microsoft studio or nothing, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's
I want to get – I'll be honest, after looking at the two, the Xbox One speaks more to me than the PlayStation 4.
I would not be – that does not surprise me.
Because I'm an old guy.
You seem like you would want the wide variety of
No, I do. I want the wider – exactly. I'm more interested in the wider variety of features.
Whereas I think it's a little too early to judge because they haven't talked games for Xbox yet.
Right. The controller's better on the Xbox. You got to admit that.
So they're both changing their controllers
But not as much.
They're both good controllers now. The Xbox One controller has rumble in the triggers now.
Ooh.
So when you're driving a car or something, you get a little bit of trigger rumble.
Yep.
And they've got a touchpad in the center of the PlayStation 4 controller.
That's goofy.
It is a little goofy, but they both feel pretty good.
And the share button.
Yes. Yeah.
No share button on the Xbox.
Nah, well, they did.
I have another question about that. Yeah. How long does it take you to change your muscle memory? Because I know for really good gamers, most of it is you don't look down ever. So with the touchpad, how much will that... I'm just so fascinated by the learning curve.
I just don't think a lot of games are going to use that touchpad, especially third-party games that have to appear on platforms that don't have that touchpad. So, you'll see a lot of gimmicky stuff get thrown in. But it's not that big of a deal. On the PlayStation 3 and Xbox, the biggest problem was the triggers on the PlayStation 3 controller were really bad. So it was where on the Xbox, you would use the back triggers for aiming and shooting. On the PlayStation 3, you would use the front triggers because they were just a little bit snappier, a little bit easier to use. So when reviewing both platforms of a game, that was the only thing you had to switch back and forth on. The sticks were a little looser on PS3 compared to the Xbox, but they seem a little bit closer this time around in terms of tightness. And I don't think it'll be as big of a problem this time out as it maybe it was last time. It was just a goofy thing.
Xbox looks pretty much like the old Xbox with a D-stick.
For an Xbox enthusiast now, my question is, if the buttons change even a little bit, is that muscle memory going to really throw you? Or is it going to be like the rest of us when Apple changed the mouse scrolling from up to down?
That was bad.
Well, that was a nightmare. That was up to... What is that?
Well, and I still use Windows, so now I'm really confused.
Why ended up switching?
And I actually keep wanting to touch my screen on my Mac.
Well, that's another problem.
It doesn't work for some reason.
It's so fun to be able to do that.
I love that part of Windows.
They'll make changes.
Does anyone really study that muscle memory as it relates to...
No, that's a good question.
Let's do it.
That's why I think really hardcore gamers are pretty much PC gamers, right? Because your mouse and keyboard is not going to change.
Well, the Xbox 360 controller became the de facto kind of standard controller.
Even on desktop.
On PC, So Steam rolled out its big picture mode. Like, they're trying to make their own weird little play for the living room.
That's going to be the third of the consoles is the Steam Box.
Yeah.
When does that come out?
I don't know. It'll just be a PC.
PC.
It already exists.
It's a PC with a big screen.
It'll be
in that price point. Wireless controllers. It might be a desire. I mean, look, I have a Steam account. All my games will go right to the big screen.
Right.
You know, I bought BioShock Infinity for both the desktop and PS3 because I wanted to play it on the console. Won't have to do that with a Steam box.
Yeah, totally.
Buy it once.
It's really convenient. We're seeing, you know, I mean, it's a crazy use case that only people that are pretty deep down that rabbit hole really want to do is hooking their PC up to a TV.
I'm buying a Steam box. I don't care what you
say. But yeah, I think the Steam box is cool and all. But I just don't think it'll be powerful enough.
You know what
the
I'm really
point they'll need to
right,
hit
at $300. Like, what are you going to do?
Know, who cares? $300. Yeah, it'll be useless.
Nep machine.
I want 60 frames a second at least at all times in 1080p.
That's why my tower is right next to my big screen TV.
That's smart.
And
that's
it sounds like
a
jet's taken off in the living room.
Right.
You know what I'm really sad they didn't announce? It was probably just a bad rumor that IntelliRoom projection, where the projected the whole room became the game.
Yeah.
That would have been. I don't think that's hard to do.
Yeah, well, you'd have to get a. I mean, they have enough problems just getting a camera in everyone's homes and having that work. Can you imagine then telling people, now you need to mount a projector and we need to calibrate all this stuff?
It doesn't have to look good. It's just a room because the dark walls don't work with the projector.
No, it doesn't matter because you're playing the game on the screen. This is just peripheral vision. Yeah, it's kind of like there's leaves, there's people moving. It's like surround sound.
That seems
it doesn't
like
have
the,
to be perfect.
Right. That seems like the sort of thing that, you know, give it 4 years or so. Just like the Kinect was mid-generation this time out. Maybe they finally start getting out there in three or four years.
Did they show it at CES? Somebody says they showed it at CES.
I wasn't there.
I didn't see that.
Ever since, you know, Illumina. Video games got tired of being treated so poorly at CES.
Everybody
and they went and started E3.
Poorly at CES.
But video games in the 90s were in a tent, man. Yeah. It was like not even in the building. It was like, here's this cold tent in the middle of Vegas in January. Go see these Super Nintendo games.
Don't feel bad. They did the same thing to the porn stars. It's okay. It's just, you know, start your own
when
show.
When I was 16, that was the best show in the world. Video games, the porn, just fantastic.
We're going to take a break. Jeff Gerstmann obviously is here from Giant Bomb. Natalie Morris, she's the crash test mom. CBS reporter and a good friend. We're so glad to have you back, Natalie.
Stop saying CBS, though. I haven't been affiliated with them.
Not CBS either. CNET who?
Well, I work mostly with NBC these
days. NBC. All right. NBC.
But I forgive you.
NBC and Crash Test Mom.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And, of course, Larry Magid. You're with CBS.
Still with CBS.
I'm just checking.
Yes. CBS Radio. Yeah.
For now. Who can say?
Who knows? No. Those initials don't carry the weight they used to, I got to tell you. Our show today brought to you by ShareFile.com. If you have to share files in business, do not send email attachments. You've heard me say that year after year after year. It was the way viruses spread. It's insecure. No email attachment is private. And, of course, the size of the attachment, nowadays, a lot of times you're going to get bounce backs. That's why I use and recommend ShareFile. I'm sending audio files to the radio stations every week. ShareFile's so great. I tried them all. I tried all the solutions. When I came to ShareFile from Citrix, it was so great. I used to have, there was one radio station that would just delete all the files as soon as they got them. I said, wait a minute, other people need these. No, I'm going to delete them. They take up too much space. Not with ShareFile. I have complete control over who can open it, how many times they can download it. I get a message when they download it. I can password protect it if I want. And ShareFile is designed for a variety of industries, dozens of them. In fact, if you go to ShareFile.com, you could try it free. Don't click the button in the middle. There's a button at the top there, a microphone. Chad, at the top there. See, it says radio listeners. That little green microphone at the top. Click that one and enter the offer code TWIT. Now, one of the things they'll show you is below the offer code, choose your industry. And they customize this for a variety of industries. There's a reason. For instance, if you're in the medical business, you need to adhere to government regulations called HIPAA. It's HIPAA compliant. It's compliant with regulations in almost every industry. So pick the industry you work in, set it up for yourself. You can white label it, customize it with your logo. People don't have to join a service or give up any information to get your files. They just go to a page with your logo on it. They click to download it. Couldn't be easier. It is the best way to share files. I do it all the time, and I encourage you to try it free for 30 days. Buy Citrix so you know it's built by business for business. Easy, secure. It integrates into your daily routine. In fact, if you use Outlook, they've got an Outlook plugin that makes it look like email, but it's better. ShareFile.com, please. Click that little tiny microphone at the top of the page there and use the offer code TWIT. So enough Xbox. I'm so glad you're here, Jeff, because it's great to have somebody who's really expert in this talk about the subject.
I had to sit through that thing. I'm happy to talk about it.
You did the homework. You get to talk. Yeah. I'm telling you, I still I'm excited enough about it to buy it. And you know, somebody in the chat room said I'll probably buy all of them.
Yeah, I mean, both platforms have their real strengths. Yeah, and you know, E3 is going to be interesting.
Glad they have Blu-ray. I know Blu-ray is a dying format, but it's nice to have.
It's not dead yet. You got those.
It's not
discs.
Dead yet. I'm not dead yet. So we're seeing Google Glass everywhere, and more and more people. Did you get your Google Glass, Natalie? Did you get some?
I did not get me some Google Glass.
They're made for mommies.
I didn't need it for crash test mom. Do you think?
So? Yes.
I mean, I see a lot of people taking pictures of their children with it, but is it a need? I don't know.
It's a first world luxury. Obviously, it's for the rich mommy. But Gina Trapani has some, and the pictures she's taken of her baby are amazing because, as you know, when baby looks at mommy, baby smiles and. But when baby looks at a camera between baby and mommy, baby goes, what the hell is that? Whereas the glasses, they're kind of out of the way. And so the pictures that she's got of Etta are amazing because you could see the love in Etta's eyes as she looks at mommy while mommy's surreptitiously taking a picture. Still in our office, I gave our pair to Jason Howell, who also has a newborn.
Those pictures.
They're beautiful, aren't they?
They are. I'm a little bit obsessed lately with the idea of not putting technology between my interactions with my children.
Yeah, no, you're
because
right.
My son has started to say, Mommy, put your phone down.
Yep.
Or, you know, he'll ask me to watch me, Mommy. And I'll say, yeah, I'm watching, but I'm maybe texting something. He goes, you're not watching. You must put that down and look at me. And so he's very explicit about what he wants. And so I don't know. I feel like it's distracting me even when it's not distracting me.
Are you able to do it?
I can, yeah, but you know what? I had to take a full class in transcendental meditation to stop it.
I saw that you and Clayton did that. No, I couldn't do it. My kids, but you know, it didn't happen until my kids were early teen. But then, you know, I start with the BlackBerry, and I'm looking at the BlackBerry all the time. And you're right, the kids go, stop it. And I couldn't.
It's really upsetting to them. And I don't get these moments back. Get these moments back with any of them. My dad, my mom, all of those things. So I really don't like the idea of putting something else in between my interactions. Like, do I really need right now to see my email and, take something?
With Google Glass, you can pretend like you're paying attention to people, but actually be reading your email.
Yeah, so that's the point of it.
This is what I need in meetings, right? Because I'm always like looking down and people are, thinking, oh, Maggie doesn't give a darn. But with this, I could actually, people would think I'm actually interested in what they have to say.
Actually, you reminded me. I have to check what Homer says.
I wish I would know that you're not paying attention to me.
It would still know.
Women know these things, you guys.
Yeah,
you think
women.
That you're going to be able to fool the chicks and, like, when she tells you about her day at the end of the day, just be like, yeah, honey, I know. And then at the same time, you're watching something. We know.
Yeah, but the thing is with Google Glass, you can record it and watch it later. So it works out okay.
What's that Chris Rock joke? Is that when your girlfriend comes home at the end of the day, even if you're not listening, just, let her finish the story and then say, I told you that bitch was crazy. Has someone at their job who they think is out to get them.
Works
so that's
every
all you
time.
Have to say is pretend is say that and they think that you're listening. But that's not true, guys. We know.
You could tell. I'm actually really curious now. The meditation helped you put aside the electronics?
That's actually one of the things that I know that I'm going to get a little esoteric here, but yes, that's one of the things I really wanted to work on is being present
I need to
in
do
my
this.
Inter-
I'm
interactions.
Not present. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I'm not
well,
present
yeah,
right now. I'm actually
costs you too
you're
much.
On your phone, Leo.
I'm harvesting my crops.
Snakes over there?
Yeah. Well, no, the snakes are gone now. Yeah.
Yeah. No instant messaging during the show.
I told you that bitch was crazy. Oh, I'm sorry.
So I got selected for the Explorers program, or they told me I would be.
Oh, did you?
But they haven't actually gotten in touch and said when I can go get it or anything
is
like that.
Is it worth $1,500 to you?
That's my question.
Yeah, that's
no,
question.
Is, as someone
not.
Who doesn't have an Android phone.
No, don't spend the money.
Yeah.
I spent, as somebody who spent the money and then gave the glasses to somebody else.
Right.
There is a hack now. There are a couple of hacks. One is the Wink hack.
Right.
Which is a side-loaded app that lets you, instead of, the way it normally works is you either tap your temples or you go like this. Peacock. And it wakes the glass up, and then it says, say, okay, glass. And then you say, okay, glass, take a picture, and then it will take a picture.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one now that you wake it up, and then you wink, and it takes a picture.
And it's very deliberate. Like, it's not like just any old wink. It's like real.
Well, I don't know. No, I don't think you have to do the pirate wink.
All right.
Arr! No, I think a little blink is all it takes.
Make
and now, and this is the side load I want. There's one that will identify people's faces. Mm-hmm. Now, Google will never do this. They had this capability in Google Goggles, and they wouldn't release it because they realized it was a stalker's dream.
Right. Well, you know, that there was an article I just was reading yesterday about, is this the pedophile's dream? Is this the creepy stalker's dream? Are you going to be on the beach and the girl in the bikini are going to be walking behind her and taking pictures?
I'm sympathetic to that, but boy, I feel like we can't let technology stop because of the perverts.
There have been hidden cameras available
technology
in the 50s,
right? Technology is created for the perverts.
Exactly. Yeah.
Didn't somebody have a bow tie camera in the 50s?
Yeah, we've had cameras.
Yeah.
We've had cameras. There's guys who put mirrors on their shoes.
Right, right. Oh, God.
You can't ban mirrors. Right. You know, I mean, yeah, there's creeps out there. But I hope that that wouldn't stop us
But you know,
from...
the bars, there's a bar in Seattle that made a big deal that they're not going to let you use Google Glass. And I mean, I think it's a publicity stunt, really, to say, look at us.
Sure.
We're ahead of the curve. We're paranoid. Moral panic. Let's get in.
Moral panic.
That's moral panic.
I just want to know is when will it be cool and acceptable to be an Android? Because I still see people with Bluetooth headsets and go, that's idiot. I'm never going to do that. And Google Glass just seems like that taken to this nth degree.
The
you know, we need implants. Forget this stuff.
I'm waiting. As soon as I get the optic implant, I am buying that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cure my color blindness.
So, Natalie, do you worry, as a woman, it's more of an issue for you than it would be for me. Nobody's going to stalk me. But is that something you think should be considered if we, you know, do we keep face identity off of Google Glass because of that?
Yeah. I guess I worry a little bit about that. And I worry more for my children than for myself because I've already chosen to make my face public. But I had a friend on Facebook who put on Google Glass and put himself this week and said, this will change the way I stalk women forever.
Oh, don't say that out loud.
Classic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an issue, but you know what? It's just an extension. Cell phones can already do this.
Right.
So, you know, remember a couple of years ago, we were talking about how gyms were banning camera phones in the locker rooms. Like, we get past it. We work through it. Most people are benevolent with their technology, I would say. Can I assert that? I don't know. That just flew out of my mouth. I don't know if that's true.
We want it to be true.
I think
we
most people are. No, most people are. I mean, every study that's ever been done, most adults, most kids are not only benevolent but relatively conscious and savvy. I do think it's a very small edge case of people who are going to abuse the technology. In fact, I was at my gym a year ago and I wanted the videotape.
You should go more than once a year for real benefit.
This happened a year ago. I know I don't look like I go to the gym, but I do. But I wanted to video a routine. I wanted to video my trainer doing something so when I got home I could watch it. They said, no, you can't bring your camera out because – God forbid you
should get upset.
People get upset. I just wanted to aim it right at my trainer.
I'm with you on that. But I love the idea of face recognition because then, you know, I'm an old guy and I don't remember people. When I first saw you, Jeff, I thought, I know this guy from somewhere. Oh, he's going to be on the show.
Right.
I thought, is he coming straight at me? Oh, my God, I'm dead.
I can be terrible with faces as well.
No, it's easy. And so the idea that this would pop up and I could say,
But then I'm going to challenge you here and say that we're allowing ourselves, we're giving ourselves permission to forget these types of things.
Like I already
Clayton
forget.
And I were talking about remembering phone numbers. We don't really do that anymore. Yeah. So now we're just going to allow technology to tell us who is important in our lives.
Damn
and
straight.
Not force ourselves to remember people who may or may not be important. Mm. Because when someone says to me, like where I'm interacting with someone somewhere, I don't know, for a career event or something, and someone says, hi, Natalie, it means something to me because I think they have bothered to remember my name. And when I go out of my way to remember someone else's name, I think that should mean something.
Politicians have aides that whisper in their ear.
Right.
You know, that's Larry. He's the guy who works.
We expect meaning out of politicians, but I do expect meaning out of everyday interactions. I know this, like I said, is going to make me the person on this show who thinks that technology is really going to hinder our interactions, but I do think that, especially in this use case.
Yeah, I mean, it's Ready Player One just kind of unfolding right before us. And it's not to get too far back to the Xbox, but, you know, that Kinect camera is required now. Like, it has to be hooked up. And they've put out all sorts of patents about this notion of they want to know how many people are in the room watching a movie when you're watching it. So
it really is very 1984.
Yeah, you know,
it's making the television a two-way.
They can block it and say, you've only paid for two people.
God, I hope that's not.
But that also means that when you do ratings, you can actually know how many people are watching the show.
Oh, he got up to make a ham sandwich.
Like that's all interesting data from like a marketing perspective. Yes. And then now they're detecting, are you smiling while you're playing a game? Are you frowning?
Oh, my God.
They're detecting the minute coloration changes in your face to try and pick up your pulse so they can know if something is, right. making your pulse race, if it's a good driving game or if it's a bad movie or something right. like that. Like all this data we're collecting and Google Glass, Kinect, like all these technologies, it could be really freaky.
What's funny,
it could be really scary for privacy.
I met with a guy from Technicolor. Believe it or not, they still exist.
Yeah.
And they have technology specifically designed when you're watching television, they can determine what it is that gets you excited. And it's a really simple little wrist thing you put on.
Your blood starts flowing.
Apparently, and I watched the show, and they told me what excited me. I was kind of embarrassed later.
They put it where? On your wrist?
Yeah, a little thing you wear on your hand. Mm. And I think it measures sweat or something. But whatever it is, I'm not sure I want the world to know what gets me excited when I'm watching TV.
And I'm wearing one of these stupid jawbone ups now to tell me how few steps I take in a day and how bad the sleep I'm getting is. And
I am willing to be the anti-Natalie. And say, I don't know what the answer is, Natalie. I completely understand, and my kids would be completely embrace the idea that I would put down the camera, put down the phone. My kids go crazy when I pick up a camera, pick up a phone. They say, pay attention. And I think you're right. But I'm willing to be the guinea pig that says, well, what if we went completely the other way? What if my entire world were mediated by technology, augmented reality? I think I'm predisposed to that anyway as a nerd. I think a lot of us geeks are kind of predisposed towards the screen versus human interaction. Can I be the experiment, Natalie? And then in a few years, let's see how you have thrived and how I have suffered.
Right. You know, I've been thinking about this a lot, and my husband Clayton and I were talking. We were reading a lot of research about brain research and how technology changes our brain fundamentally. And I read Nick Carr's book, The Shallows, and his idea of neuroplasticity and how technology is going to literally change what we have the capacity to think, how we think it. We're going to not be able to think deeply and synthesize any longer. We will only be capable of surface level thought. And now we'll be incapable of thought that's so surface level that we cannot even remember the name of someone. I think that's what's so scary to me. But yes, we should see if this technology works and see what it can do for us. But we as humans have agency to decide this is not how we choose to live our lives. We will use it in certain use cases. But to walk around my house here when I have made you dinner and then sit down with your glass and interact with someone else, I'm sorry, no.
That's rude.
I totally disagree. I think that this notion that somehow we're going to have shallower thoughts.
Why I live alone now, by the way.
To me, technology actually frees me up to actually have more thinking about what I'm doing, because I no longer have to remember the trivial. It's kind of like a calculator actually allowed me to do mathematics as opposed to long division.
Exactly.
And it actually enabled me. And I'm not, you know, well, the other thing that's interesting, Leo, you and I are somewhere around the same vintage. We have young adult kids.
Vintage is the right word.
And it's ironic, and Natalie, the relatively young adult, it's ironic that us old farts are actually
the ones who want the tech.
Well, no, I'm just thinking my kids are actually becoming the anti-tech people in the
family.
Isn't
that funny? And the older people are the ones.
Right. Everybody's worried about the kids being so plugged in. But in fact,
generation rebels against the generation.
I ran into Richard Hart. Remember Richard from CNET, the TV show, and a great guy. CNET, he was Evening Magazine host. Mm. And he teaches now at the Academy of Art. He teaches video production and stuff. And I said, it must be cool to work with young people who are really grew up as internet natives and understand. He said, no, you'd be surprised. He said, they are much less savvy than we were.
Yep.
Or we are, because we had to figure it out. We had to make it work. It didn't work for us. For them, it's a consumable. It's not a anything they had to learn.
It's not as exciting.
Fresh.
They get their iPhone, which came out when they were in elementary school, and big deal.
So he says they actually know much less about technology than our generation does, which actually I think makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But that's a different issue than the issue of connecting to people.
They're obsessed with how it makes their life different.
That's right.
It's a given.
It's a given.
Whereas we are obsessed with how it can make our lives different. And so, but we can, if we take it too far, we can raise a generation that's just schizophrenic, that they can't think in one way or the other. And so, you know, I read copious amounts of parenting books about how to raise a child that can think and synthesize. And a lot of that has to do with keeping screens away from them until 2, teaching them to take information and be able to connect it with this information, but do it themselves, not put Google Glass on your toddler and say, hey, when you see that, you can look it up and you don't even have to remember that person's name.
I don't know. I think that critical thinking skills.
You're setting me on fire, you guys.
Critical thinking is still the key thing, whether you're seeing it in print, whether you're seeing it online, whether it's coming in Google Glass. We need to teach our kids to be critical.
But how do you teach that? How do you teach that now?
Well, I don't think that taking away screens from young people actually reinforces or has anything to do with that. I think that attention. Natalie, if you're using Google Glass or your cell phone instead of paying to your paying attention to your kids, you're absolutely right. But as long as you're attentive to your kids, I'm not worried about your kids. They're going to be fine because obviously they have parents that actually care about them.
What we don't want to do is experiment with our kids. And I think that there is an experiment going on with two-year-olds and iPads right now. Yeah. And what we don't know is what the result will be.
I think Nick Carr
is kind of a notorious anti-technologist, and I'm not sure I buy what he's saying. I think it's also possible, we don't know, and I hate to say it, I hate to experiment, but maybe we should experiment. What is also possible is that the wide spread availability of facts has changed what thought is about now. In fact, we are better able to synthesize than ever before. I mean, if you think about it, before Copernicus could make his observations about which revolved around which, he had to collect a lot of data. Now the data is just available, and it might be possible for him to do that higher level thinking without worrying about collecting data.
I used to have to,
what makes us great thinkers is the ability to synthesize and interact.
Yes.
That's what makes us different than primates. So if we cannot interact beyond the basic...
I've never seen a monkey not look into another monkey's eyes instead look at the cell phone. Monkeys interact. We are different. Maybe that's exactly what makes us different is that there are internal processes beyond.
People worried about that when MySpace was out there. I mean, people are always worried about that. Check out this article. You've probably seen it. The Touchscreen Generation by Hannah Rosen in The Atlantic. Excellent article about she is experimenting with her kids.
Oh, boy.
And so far, it's turning out, I think, okay. But I'm not suggesting that, we turn our kids into guinea pigs. But I do think that this notion that somehow technology is going to keep us from interacting with each other, not true. The airplanes are full of people who are traveling to be together. Skype hasn't prevented people from wanting to be in the same room. Hey, I drove out here from Palo Alto to be on your show. I could have come in by Skype, but I wanted that human interaction. And I don't think the technology has really interrupted that. I mean, we're always going to worry.
No, I'm not saying that either. And my two-year-old is very good with the iPad. And I do a lot of app testing for, Crash Test Mom. I test a lot of children's apps. So I'm not saying to keep it away from them. I'm saying that we need to put agency and thought into how we use this technology, not just because it's there. And we have to do it. We have to think about what it's doing to us before we just take it.
And I think we all agree that we should not be using it as an electronic babysitter. I mean, that's for sure, that you still need the parental interaction, tech or no tech.
The truth is the experiment's going to happen, will it or not, and because there are plenty of parents who are not as thoughtful and conscientious as you are, Natalie, who are going to put their – I mean, there's a whole generation that's coming of age now that sat in front of a TV 8 hours a day.
Exactly.
Yeah, a lot of latchkey kids grew up to be just fine, after, getting home from school and spending the rest of the day watching TV or playing video games. They didn't all turn into complete social misfits.
It's appropriate to have this thought process, though, in this conversation, because we do have to think, but I think a lot of this is going to happen anyway. So we're in the experiment whether we want to or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same way that, we had to be exposed to modems and BBSs and all that sort of stuff.
What was the name of Neil Postman's book, Distracted to Death?
Yeah.
And this has been a problem for before you were born, Natalie. The idea of people disconnecting from the real world if you think about it, most entertainment is about disconnecting, right?
Even the Greeks were worried about print writing and how it would keep us from now memorizing monologues like
amusing
that was
ourselves
once necessary. Right. So I get it. I don't mean to be overly anachronistic about it. But like I said, I just worry about if we take this technology and run with it and don't even think about the
consequences. No, I agree.
Yeah.
Mm.
But,
I'm with
you. There was a moral panic about comic books, right?
Yeah.
Huge issue.
Trouble. Right here in River City, it starts with a P and it rhymes with a T and that stands for pool.
Absolutely.
It's a terrible trouble because then you're reading Captain Billy's Whiz Bang.
That's right. And don't forget Bye Bye Birdie, kids.
On the phone.
Oh, they were terrible. Oh, kids.
Teenagers, all they do is they talk on the phone all the time.
Yep.
This is always, I think you nailed it, Natalie, when you said the Greeks were worried about this. This has been a constant concern. And it's going to happen because we are now in a world where distraction is available at every turn.
Yep.
Have you heard the term paleo nostalgia?
No, what does that mean?
I just read this recently. It's this sort of nostalgia for an era before modernity. And so that's why the paleo diet is so big these days. People talk about like letting your kids just play outside. Yeah. Don't come up with, you know, a bunch of technology to distract them. And I know for a fact that I do suffer from paleo nostalgia in a lot of ways. But I'm a technology reporter, right? So it's sort of a weird juxtaposition.
So what you need is an app that, that runs a Google Glass that turns your whole world into that era, so you can just live in whatever era you want to live in. It's kind of like that that Woody Allen movie where they go back to Paris and, you know, generation go back and back.
I just got an Oculus Rift, so I could just put that on.
I got
on
my Rift in the office. Yeah. Well, what are we going to do with it?
I don't know. Put it 1950s app, and we'll just walk around in a black and white world, and it'll just be Pleasantville all over again.
Exactly.
You know, it's such a great conversation. It doesn't happen enough, and I think it's something to be paying attention to. I love it that, Natalie, that you've taken a stand and moved in a direction of mindfulness. And I'm very curious how this experiment goes for you and Clayton. And I think your kids are the benefits. Are the kids meditating too?
No, they're too young. They can't sit still for anything. They're one and two. But hopefully they see us taking the time to do it. And it will be
really
something
good. That's great.
Yeah. Mindfulness, there's nothing wrong. Mindfulness is great. One should be mindful at all times as much as possible. Pay attention.
I think so. And if you're in your technology, do it. Be there. Yeah. You know, you want an instant message, do it. And I think I read a stat somewhere that some people can carry on like 5 instant messages and do their work at the same time. And, you know, I know we become very capable of that kind of thing, but then do we become incapable of IRL?
Maybe, but maybe it's an evolution. It's not a negative evolution. Maybe it, that now what we are is a, and this is where the brain's plasticity helps us. Yep. Is that we are now able to take lots of inputs, synthesize it, do creative, clever thinking based on the vast amount of information we're receiving. That is not, may feel to a paleo nostalgist like, well, you're not paying any attention. But in fact, we're doing lots more. We're paying more attention. We're hearing more notes.
Yeah, when I hear about, you know, kids aren't reading 600 page books anymore.
Maybe, but you know what? That's not what the neurology is saying. The research that's out there about multitasking is not saying
it's
that
task switching.
We're
it's
becoming,
not multitasking.
Right. But the research that I found anyway is not saying we're getting better at doing more things. It's saying we're getting worse at doing many different things.
I don't know. You know, there's a lot of people that are worried that kids don't want to read 600 page books anymore. First of all, that's not completely true. And second of all, I'm not sure that's such a horrible thing. I mean, as long as you're consuming information and learning.
You know what I do?
Does it matter how long they are?
I read 600-page books.
I don't know. I mean, we're putting a lot on ourselves. We were hunters and gatherers not many generations ago.
But that's the point of the brain's. That's the point of the brain's plasticity. There's an evolutionary time frame, but that is not the human time frame anymore. The evolutionary time frame says we're the same as the hunter-gatherers. That's the paleo
diet. I am hunting and gathering the world's greatest animated GIFs every single day.
Absolutely.
More cat GIFs.
And you're being hunted as well.
Exactly.
But the brain's plasticity means that we can, faster than evolution would change us, that we might be able to adapt to new environments and do things in amazing things that could be possible.
I think my concern...
is a loaded term.
I would suggest that the brain scientists, it's difficult for them to come to this without presupposed, you know, preconceptions. And that perhaps they're looking at the data and interpreting it in a way that maybe somebody without those same preconceptions might not.
I feel like my attention span is becoming more and more shot as the years go on, to the point where...
That's age, by the way, too.
Is it? Okay. For me, it's been... I don't want to sit and watch a movie anymore. Like it's part of why this Xbox stuff doesn't work out great.
My iPhone, my tablet.
Oh yeah, I gotta have
a million things going on. Yeah. I'm tweeting about it.
I spent an hour watching Vines the other day. Just different Vines.
No. Seconds at a time, 1 hour.
Yeah, every 6 seconds you get that opportunity to bail out on it and do something else with your time. So it's this constant decision making as opposed to this 90-minute movie or this half-hour TV show. Tim and Eric is 11 minutes long. That's all you need. Anything more than 11 minutes?
What, Natalie?
I said, do you guys even go into the bathroom without a technology anymore?
Mm. No.
See? You can't even poop?
I can't brush my... forget pooping. I brush my teeth while I'm looking at my phone.
What? You guys.
If I could figure out a no-hand way to brush my teeth, I would.
On your colon, and I think we're going
to
have a...
I don't think that that's a bad thing, necessarily, and I'm willing to be the experiment, the test tube. Yeah. I'm going to bathe myself in inputs, and I think what will happen is my brain will get better at those. I don't think the short attention... I understand the short attention span thing, But I think what can happen is more is happening in a shorter amount of time, perhaps.
Yeah.
And so maybe, it, you know, and I still listen to 600-page books, but I listen to them while I'm doing other things. I read very long books all the time, and I love it. And so, Vic, that's a good chance to segue to an Audible ad right now, so shut up.
When I'm out to dinner with my wife, I go to the bathroom to check my email. It's amazing how often, you know, I say, hey, I'm old. I have to go to the bathroom a lot. It's actually a challenge.
But really, and then when you come out, you say, I told you that bitch was crazy.
She's going to think you have a cocaine habit if you keep going to the bathroom that frequently.
What, honey? Yeah.
You guys know the T.S. Eliot quote, where's the knowledge we have lost in information?
Ah, he was an old fart.
That's all I'm going
to
say.
Yeah, he's an old. But you know what? I got to tell you, if you want to read The Wasteland in an amazing way, get the iPad app where it has six different people reading it, including Eliot himself. It has Eliot's handwritten notes. It has actually it's not even that. It's the handwritten notes of, oh, I can't remember who. It's really an amazing thing that only the iPad could do, a multimedia experience of The Wasteland. And I would bet more people read The Wasteland through that than ever read it on paper. Ezra Pound, that's right. It was Ezra Pound's commentary on The Wasteland. It's fascinating. I mean, and so T.S. Eliot might even come alive in this kind of environment. No? You disagree, I can tell.
I don't know. I
she's meditating right now, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm not meditating. I'm giving that some time.
I'm so glad you're here, Natalie, to give us what I think is the absolutely correct point of view, but I'm just saying I'm going to throw myself in the fire of information and let my body burn.
Let's get implants as soon as
I would do that.
Forget wearing the glasses. We got to get
because
new
I'm old
new
enough.
Eyes.
My kids
new
are grown. It doesn't matter anymore, and I'm willing to take the chance and see if my brain's plasticity can be maintained. If my short attention span can be transmuted into something that means I'm understanding information faster and better and synthesizing it faster and better, I'm willing to take the chance.
Don't mistake me. I use my technology a lot. I mean, that's what I do for a living. I read a lot of books on technology. Right. I'm always in it. But my aim and my goal in life is to figure out how he can use technology with meaning.
Right.
Look, I completely agree with you. I mean, I think that meaning and being attentive, being present. One of the concerns I had about the Google phone, I'm sorry, the Facebook phone, was the whole issue of presence. The idea that, do we really want one more thing to connect us with the rest of the world when we're actually with people we know and love? So I'm not, as much as I, geeky as I may be, Natalie, I'm totally with you in the fact that we have to be focused on the people we're around, and especially parents.
Ask Grum. I don't like people. Actually, maybe you and I, Jeff, are uniquely suited for this. I would guess so. I was ADD as a kid, diagnosed with adult ADD. I love change. I embrace change. I get bored if things don't change constantly.
Yeah.
I love all of that, and I think I'm uniquely adapted, evolved, suited to the modern world. Not everybody will be.
Yeah, it could. For all I know, it could be slowly destroying my life, and I don't know it.
But we don't care.
Hey,
do
whatever.
We?
It's, well, right, it's been all right, like
right
so
on.
Far, so
I'll take it.
For the ADD folks that I'm with you, I think it's actually enhancing our life because it actually we're sort of in our element here. I mean, the world is actually
that's what I'm
the
saying.
The world is actually adapted.
The
to
world
me.
Is adapted
yeah,
to us.
Of, yeah.
We're in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
If I had been baling hay in some medieval feudal estate, I'd be pretty bored right now.
Yeah. Well, you could have you could be listening to an audiobook or something. Baling hay.
I don't bail hay without audible.com. I can tell you that right now. I'm listening to Peter F. Hamilton's new... Boy, is he a good writer. He is too good to be a science fiction writer. Now people are leaving. See, that we're scaring people away. See you later. Goodbye. Goodbye. Thanks for joining us. By the end of the show, there'll be nobody in the live studio audience.
Is that the goal? Just clear the room?
We're trying to clear the room.
A lot of antiquing to be done in Petaluma on the weekends, I know.
It is true.
Yeah.
It's true. Is it the same way on the east side?
No. There's nothing on the east side.
You've got those funny cars.
Scorched
races.
Earth, meth labs.
Yeah.
It's all.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great stuff.
If you have not yet tried Audible, I don't know. You mustn't be listening to the Twit Network because we talk about it a lot. It is a fabulous place to get audiobooks. I'm listening to Great North Road, which is the latest from my absolute, I have to say, my favorite science fiction author, Peter F. Hamilton. Most of his books, including Fallen Dragon, which is probably the one you should start with. It's a single volume, for one thing, are on audible.com. They've got so many great books, 100,000 titles, read by the best readers in the world. It's one of the reasons I really... There it is, Great North Road. Boy, is that good. How long is that, Chad? It's 28 hours, something like that? That is
you didn't even hit it right. It is 36 hours.
Okay.
and 37
That's
minutes.
A 600-page book right there. Wow. And I love it because I get immersed in it. I'm in it. In fact, what's really interesting about Audible is when I read the Peter Rothfuss, it's a trilogy. He's only written two out of the three, the King Killer Chronicles. I was in that world. And it's funny. Every once in a while, I'll be doing something again that I was doing when I was listening to that book, and I feel like I'm back in that world. It really is immersive. There's something about a great piece of fiction, or nonfiction, too. I listen to a lot of nonfiction, that immerses you, engrosses you, puts you there. And so the times when you're in a, you know, where you just time is wasted, you're driving a car. Sure, I could be meditating, floating 3 inches off the seat. But no, I prefer to be back in time, living, you know, an amazing world in Outlander or in the future with Peter F. Hamilton. When I'm at the gym on the Stairmaster, there's nothing more boring. And that's when I start to go into my special place, thanks to Audible.com. I want you to try it. We can get you two books. We're going to sign you up for the Platinum account at audible.com/twit2. There's the new one from the Kite Runners author, Khalid Hosseini's And the Mountains Echoed. I hear it's very good. Control-Alt-Delete, that's another great one. Reboot and Rebuild Your Business, that's a nonfiction. There's lots of fiction, nonfiction, history, autobiography. I love autobiography for some reason. And yes, I even read some of those research papers that you like to read. Oh, a free short story from Neil Gaiman. I'm going to download that right now. This is why you want to be an Audible member, because it's just a treasure trove of audio riches. Go to audible.com/twit2. You're going to sign up for the Platinum account. That's two books a month. Your first month's free. Your first two credits are free. Inferno, that's the new one from Dan Brown. Look at all this stuff. Great Gatsby. Oh, put that on my list. I just saw the movie. Now I want to reread F. Scott Fitzgerald's classic. It's only 4 hours. That's an easy one.
Okay, can I give book recommendations?
Yeah. What do you listen to?
That pertain to the things that we've been talking about.
Yes.
Okay, if you want to talk about neuroplasticity, The Shallows was one of them by Nick Carr.
That's Nick Carr's. Yep.
The Brain That Changes the Self by Norman Doidge. I didn't say that very well. The Brain That Changes Itself is also an Audible. That's a good one. The World Until Yesterday, I just started reading, by Jared Diamond, talking about what we can learn from traditional societies.
Love his stuff. I read everything he writes.
Yeah, so that's on Audible. It's 18 hours. It's a long book, but
well worth
very
it.
Very good. And then if you're interested in specifically like child development and Brain Rules for Baby is also on Audible.
Okay. I'll have grandchildren someday.
Yeah.
Here's the choice. You get go to audible.com/twit2. There's something literally for everybody. First two books are free. Cancel anytime in the first 30 days. Pay nothing. Those books are yours to keep, but you will not cancel because you will be engrossed. I guarantee you. I listen all the time. Audible. I listen on my Sonos so I can do the laundry. I can do the chores.
You got a headphone in right now. Are you listening to a book?
I am listening right now.
Yeah. There it is.
Yeah. I can't put them down. People get mad at me because I say read. It's not reading, but it's listening to the same words. I don't know how it's different. Yeah. It's sure great. So I'm going to read this Norman Doidge book. That sounds very interesting. The Brain That Changes Itself. Personal triumphs.
Yeah, a lot of really interesting Silicon Valley brain researchers, especially. One from Petaluma. I forget his name. A lot of good research coming out of Berkeley, Stanford, and North Bay.
Well, and one of the things that's going on, the guy who founded Graffiti and later Palm has kind of turned away from being an entrepreneur and has now started... He wrote a great book, by the way, on the brain and how it works, he was a neuroscientist before he started Graffiti. I'll have to look up the name of his...
I've been taking notes, Natalie. I know what to get.
He has a new company, Numenta, it's called, that is trying to create a chip that works the same way as the human brain cells. The issue with the human brain is massively parallel, right? And the way Von Neumann machine, the computers we use, is very linear. Does something, then does something else, does something else.
Yep.
So Numenta is creating a chip designed to work more like the human brain does in the hopes that we can at some point create a thinking machine. Really interesting stuff.
There's this notion of localism that it used to be that, you know, the hypothalamus did this thing and the medulla oblongata did this thing. And that's just sort of I learned from this book. Not true, because if one piece of the brain gets damaged, everything else sort of jumps in and helps. And that's sort of with multi-core, that's the
That's right.
Goal.
The brain is amazingly adaptive.
It doesn't happen that way anymore.
We understand very little. This is the book On Intelligence by Jeff Hawkins, mm-hmm. the founder of QAM. Yeah. And if you want to kind of understand the current, and this is a few years old now, but if you want to understand the current state of the art in brain science, this is fascinating. He did all this research as a preparatory to starting Numenta. Highly recommend it. Larry, you really are taking notes.
I really am taking notes.
Yeah. Jeff is an amazing.
Jeff Hawkins. Hawkins.
Amazing.
Very nice guy, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Numenta, I think, is Berkeley based. I don't know how successful they've been so far, but he's got the money to fund
it. He's got plenty of money.
Plenty of money. Really good book on. If you just want to understand brain science and how the brain works, this is.
Productive theories about what intelligence is or how the brain works as a whole. Most neurobiologists don't think much about overall theories
That's
of the
Jeff's
brain
reading,
because they're
though.
Engrossed in doing experiments to collect more data about the brain's many subsystems.
All right, we don't have to listen to the whole thing. We'll save that. That's a work for assignment for home later.
Okay.
Natalie's great because I first time I ever had her on, she had a stack of books. She'd done research. You're amazing.
I love to read.
You love to learn, I think.
I love
a stack
it.
Of websites. I have a stack of pancakes.
So let me ask you, not a bad thing. Not a bad thing. Let me ask you about Tim Cook testifying in the Senate. Of course, the best moment was when John McCain, as Tim Cook's about to leave, says, "Hey, by the way, can you do something about the iPhone updating all the time? It's driving me crazy." of course, the issue is Apple's perfectly legal.
Right.
Although somewhat odd tax avoidance system in which they have, for instance, a $30 billion Irish subsidiary that has no employees.
Right.
And, of course, pays no tax
anywhere,
not even in Ireland, saving Apple considerable amount of money in tax. I've raised this on MacBreak Weekly. Is there anybody who wants to say Apple is immoral, wrong, illegal? It feels a little unethical.
It depends how you
unethical.
Define immoral. I mean, they're not breaking the law, so
no. In fact, they're taking every advantage
of it. I mean, most taxpayers who are smart do. Whether the law,
but most can't do this.
Most can't do things like that. No, you can deduct your uniform if you're a cleaning lady, maybe.
Right.
You're in a union.
IRS is going to come down on you.
Come down on you.
It's hard to do that.
It is, and so I mean, I think it's the whole tax system, but. First of all, I don't think it's a tech story. And CBS asked me if I wanted to cover this, and I said, no, it's not a tech story. It's a business story, and it's the nature
story.
Of our tax system. And so it's totally unfair, but is it immoral? I don't know. I mean, it's unfair.
It may even be their responsibility to their stakeholders.
They should clean up the tax code.
Right.
If they want to address this, you don't go to Apple and say, hey, stop taking advantage of our terrible system. You rebuild the system, right?
I mean, right.
Google does it too, we should point
school,
out.
They teach you that you need to figure out the way to pay the least amount of taxes for your shareholders so that you do better things with that money. That's business school 101.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they do better things. They've got it in the savings account right now, but
it's better for them.
Better for them.
I'm sure.
Well, I think that it just simply indicates that the public good is not necessarily equal to the corporate good, that what's good for business is not necessarily good for all of America. I'm not saying that Apple isn't good for America. It's a great company. It's done great things. Even John McCain, I think, apparently has an iPhone.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that it's our responsibility, the country, to be propping up their bottom line.
Even Warren Buffett said, I should be paying more taxes.
Absolutely.
Right.
But understand that you can't completely blame Congress, because what Congress, unfortunately, is trying to do with tax policy is encourage certain behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
So they do create tax. Some of it's by lobbyists, let's admit it. Some of it is industry going to them and saying, hey, Congressman, I'd like to support your campaign, but you got to give me some credit for the oil wells it didn't produce this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that works. But a lot of it is also like the mortgage. I used this in the past, the mortgage deduction, which you could argue is kind of a tax avoidance strategy for people who buy homes. But
if you're
Congress
a renter,
did it.
You don't get it. And if you're a homeowner, you get it. So it's not fair.
Congress did it to encourage home ownership, rightly or wrongly. But that's how tax code is used.
Right. And try taking that away.
Yeah. One of the things.
I wouldn't own my home if they took it away.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, that's right. It makes home ownership feasible for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't be. One thing Tim Cook did do is tell Walt Mossberg at All Things D that there will be a Mac made in the U.S., in Texas.
Is that the U.S.?
Don't mess with Texas, baby. Actually, he revealed it would be Texas in that Senate hearing. He said, we're going to invest $100 million to build a Mac product line. The product will be assembled in Texas, including components made in Illinois and Florida. Equipment in the factory will be made in Kentucky and Michigan. That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. They said it'll be a new Mac, by the way, not a Mac existing product.
But
line.
Apple isn't going to be building it itself. It's going to subcontract it out.
Just is it Foxconn?
I think it's Foxconn.
Foxconn does operate some plants in Texas.
You realize this is a temporary issue, that a few years from now, everything will be built in America by robots. Yeah. All we need is cheap energy, because cheap labor is no longer going to be relevant.
Well, then you've gained nothing because nobody's getting a job
this. Except for a few engineers that maintain the equipment,
You
gain no jobs, but they'll be made in America.
So teach your kids how to what?
Fix robots. The machines. Fix robots, exactly.
Know how to tax robots.
Yeah.
Ooh, robot income tax.
The robot tax code is completely unfair. This robot says it's a Delaware corporation. What does that even mean?
But can same-sex robots get married and get the tax break?
Not in Texas.
Not in Texas.
We're going to see a little bit of news from Apple in a couple of weeks at WWDC, which will incidentally... The Apple keynote will overlap the Microsoft reveal at the E3 of the Xbox One.
Yeah, you know, usually Apple has something during GDC that overlaps, and everyone goes like, oh, does this mean Apple is getting into games? Like, no, they don't care about games.
Macworld used to overlap with CES.
Right,
yeah. It's just, there's too many companies, too few days in the year.
Yep.
But I think this Apple will probably be the one to watch this year. Now, maybe not for you, Jeff. You've got to cover Microsoft.
I have a job to do, but I really want to know what iOS 7 is all about.
Yep. That's one thing we'll see for sure.
Yep.
Don't know if we'll see any new hardware, although the rumor mill's pretty strong we will see a new MacBook because, of course, Intel's Haswell chip comes out in a few days.
Any chance we'll get touchscreen on the MacBook Air so I can stop going like this with
everything
happening?
I keep saying that, and all the experts say no way.
Is this a MacBook Air? No, it's got Acer's name on it.
Yeah, right? It looks just like a MacBook Air, but it's a Windows device. It's exactly, it's actually a little thinner than your MacBook Air.
Yeah, but the difference is he can do this, you know.
But I can touch it, and I love.
I can touch it too. Nothing happens.
Yeah, mine scrolls.
Yeah, no, I like that.
I think touch is great. OS X is not really designed around touch in the same way that, say, Windows 8 is.
Right.
But nothing to say they couldn't do that. It's an easy enough thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Do you use a touch screen, Natalie, at all, or besides the tablet?
No, not besides the tablet.
I like
touch laptops.
Laptops.
I've been converting. We have a Google Chrome notebook here, and I don't. Use it all that often. Yeah. But, you know, I don't really use my laptops all that often besides the tablet.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So is it iPad mostly?
Mostly iPad, because I'm on the run.
I'm still a keyboard
guy. And I've got, I have the Logitech keyboard for iPad Mini.
That's nice. That's a good choice.
Yep.
Yeah.
The ultra-thin PC keyboard, whatever it is.
I go everywhere with my MacBook Air and my iPad Mini. I actually don't like the regular iPad because it's not that much smaller and lighter than my laptop.
Love the Mini.
I love the Mini because it's so small.
Me
and
too.
I read on it.
A Retina Mini. That's what we want.
It's coming. Well, that's probably coming.
As someone who puts out a lot of video, I want new Mac Pros.
Mm.
Like, yeah, good luck, Jeff.
Come on.
No, ain't going to happen.
You got to render this stuff.
Not going to happen.
New version of Final Cut that undoes all the stuff that the current version of Final Cut.
Although, if Apple's going to do a new product line in Texas, that might be what they'll do is not a pro, but something. Remember last year, Tim Cook said, we'll have something for you pro users. Not a pro.
Yeah,
we'll
not a pro, for but you users. Yeah.
I love this idea, and I hope they do it. I don't know if it's real or not. A modular Mac Pro where you kind of stack up the things that you want to give you the expandability you need.
Right.
Wouldn't that be nice?
So at that point, you know, shouldn't you just go build a Hackintosh and get some of that same functionality?
Well, if they don't give you a Mac Pro soon, that's what you're going to do.
Yeah,
exactly. That's the real threat that Apple has to face.
Yeah.
How about an iWatch? You think they'll all talk about that? No. Apple TV, a television set? No.
No.
It's iOS 7, and that's pretty much what we're going to hear about.
Yeah.
A new flattened iOS 7. Well, that was dull. Maybe we'll skip WWDC.
Apple is kind of getting dull.
Apple is no longer...
Yeah. Oh, bite your tongue.
It's kind of your grandpa's operating system.
It's getting a little... I mean, it's like,
I've gotten to this point where I don't care about phones anymore.
Yeah,
like when I got my iPhone 3G, it was like, oh, this is great. There's all these apps, and now it's just like, you know.
I got the Samsung Galaxy S4.
I just want to text people and just.
I love phones. This is the HTC One. I go back and forth between this and the Galaxy S4, but the camera on the HTC One is so sweet.
Look at that.
Look at that. It's just a great camera. 4 megapixels. It really works. And I did a Zoe of you, so you're moving.
Oh, that's.
Yeah.
I should have posed a little differently.
You're still an iPhone family over there in the Tinky Winky Lodge?
Yeah, I am. And I feel so boring about it.
It is kind of dull, though, isn't it, nowadays?
It's very trite to use an iPhone. I know that.
Yeah.
Yep. And then most of the apps that you want to use, they already exist. You know, like the rate at which people are coming out with these game-changing apps that just make you rethink what this thing in your pocket is capable of.
Facebook coming out with a clone of Snapchat, which isn't even as good as Snapchat. It's clone apps don't do much for me.
I'm hot right now on Google. I think Google Plus redesign...
Great.
The incredible, and by the way, it's now available voice search on Chrome. What is it, 27, the new Chrome? You can do it now.
Have you gotten the Google app for iPhone and Android where you can talk to it? It's really very good.
Yeah.
In fact, the only reason I like Siri better is with Siri, you can hit that little button at the bottom of the iPhone.
Right.
Whereas with the Google thing, you got to mess around with
it. No, you see, I've set it up, so watch this. I've set it up on this Android phone that I swipe up, it launches the
voice. That's terrific,
so. So that's easy enough to do.
That might get me to buy an Android.
Oh,
you guys putting that down?
Uh-oh. It's so easy to do. Yeah, it's recording everything you're saying right now. Sending it back to the Google servers.
Probably sending it back to Apple.
Where Larry Page will analyze it.
Right.
And then offer you on your next time you surf something.
Discount on an Android.
Discount on something you want. Yeah. Oh, Larry, you said you want an HTC One.
Right, exactly. Here it is.
No, I think the innovation right now is with Android phones. I think the HTC One, I think the Galaxy S4, the Sony Xperia. There's some really nice phones out there. Maybe you should think about those, Natalie.
Oh, I've been thinking about them, Leo.
Yes, you should.
Give it some thought.
Google Now would show you your Giants scores. Giants beat the Rockies 7-3. I know that because...
You know what? We do a lot of shared albums, and then we do a lot of iChat, and you know, we use the new messages.
But you'd like the Hangouts even better because it's cross-platform.
I do like the Hangouts, right. But, there's a lot of things on iOS that I'm just kind of... I'm in there, and to move it, I feel lazy about. But like I said, I don't feel like, especially you go to a mom's group and everyone's got the iPhone, I'm like, I should be more I should be more original than this. I'm a tech geek.
Have you checked out this? I'm going to try something here. I'm going to click this little voice thing and say, who is Leo Laporte?
Oh, this is the cool one.
Yeah. If it works.
I can do it on here.
Who is Leo Laporte?
We'll do it on Chrome.
I know it knows you.
We'll do it on Chrome because I'm hooked up. Can you see this, Chad?
Oh, voice search is temporarily unavailable.
Yeah, that's nice. That's because you're on an iPhone.
Oh, okay.
Who is Leo Laporte?
You got it.
According to Wikipedia, Leo Gordon Laporte is an Emmy Award-winning American technology broadcaster, author, and entrepreneur.
That's on the desktop, and it'll work with your Chrome.
How come it doesn't say that I'm an Emmy Award winner?
That's my middle name. Don't mock it.
It's so cute.
That's information from Wikipedia.
I didn't know you won an Emmy.
Way back when. Let's try it. Let's try it with Larry Magid.
Uh-oh.
Next time I get all fired up, I'm going to use your whole name now.
Leo Gordon Laporte, you listen to me. You're not mindful.
Oh, no.
Wait a minute. Stop, Google. Stop listening to that. For some reason, I got Mitt Romney's binders full of women. Uh-oh. I don't...
that was not from who is Larry Magid, by the way.
Who is Larry Magid? See, Magid, you're going to have problems.
Try it
but
again.
It did find you.
It found me. Try it again. Who is Larry Magid? Who has married Larry?
According to Wikipedia, Larry Magid, also known as Lawrence J. Magid, is an American journalist, technology columnist, and commentator.
Pretty good.
Oh, he didn't say what year I was born.
Thank God. He's an ancient. Who is Natalie Morris?
Usually it gets Natalie Morales.
I got it, but it didn't do the... you got to work on your Wikipedia.
Didn't talk about you.
I should say Natalie Therese Morris, née Del Conte. Then it would get it right. So isn't that cool? Now, we don't yet have that thing where it's always listening.
Right.
And we don't have the contextual stuff. But you're starting to see some of the knowledge graphs show up. I think what Google's starting to do is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think a lot of the stuff is really neat. At some point, it does go back to some of those privacy concerns.
Who cares? Privacy, schmivacy.
I don't like being used for marketing data. And even though we all are all the time.
What good are you if nothing?
But you're the beneficiary of that data.
Yep. That's right.
Yeah. Sometimes it doesn't feel like a fair trade, I guess. I don't know. I'm giving up too much of myself.
You're getting a lot of free stuff, though.
By the way, somebody in the chat room just said, I love it how Twit underestimates Tim Cook and Apple. How are we underestimating Tim Cook and Apple and what?
I'm just saying it's boring.
Is there some, but I mean, seriously,
it's a lot of money.
I think that there's a lot of hangover from Apple. For so many years, Apple did surprise us, did amaze us, did do stuff that we didn't think is possible, transformed the music in the world, transformed the smartphones, transformed computing, transformed touch computing. But are those days gone? I think they're gone.
I am merely satisfied with my Apple devices. Yep. They're fine. They help me get things done. But that sense of wonder that you got from the
is that because Steve is gone?
I hope not.
He did say at the stockholders meeting that there'll be new categories of products this year. So who knows? Maybe they'll amaze us coming forward.
I would love.
That's what they're telling
us. I would love for the magic to come back. Yeah, there'd be nobody happier than me to see Tim Cook sprinkle fairy dust on it, and suddenly the computer and technology industry wakes up once again with new categories, new ideas. Yep. That would be wonderful. I just don't know if that's going to happen.
I'm not a tech visionary, so I can't tell you what is going to be next.
The rumor mills don't excite me, right? I don't get excited about a watch. I don't get excited about a big television panel. Right. So maybe they've got something. But we all knew about the iPhone long before it was announced, and we kind of envisioned what it would be, although it was more than most of us imagined.
Yeah.
And it really did. It was so much cooler than a BlackBerry. So much cooler.
Mm-hmm.
And what will they do next? I don't know. I hope they do. I agree with you.
Let's take a break. We'll talk about Yahoo, Tumblr, Marissa Meyer, Flickr, and porn.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah. Stay tuned. Meanwhile, Natalie's not amused.
I'm muted myself.
Oh, good. I mean, not good. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, never mind. Oh, God, I'm in trouble. You can call me Leo Gordon Laporte anytime. Natalie Therese Del Conte.
You always find some way to be
I know.
A little bit sexist when it comes
Thank
to
you.
Last time you called That's me a real woman. And I have thick skin, so it doesn't.
You're not a real woman?
Wow, Natalie, you just followed me on Twitter.
I'm a real man.
Yeah, you're right. That's what I was just doing, actually. That's why
I get out of this show. I got Natalie following me.
Oh, that's great.
That's wonderful.
I'll
follow you back.
Did I?
Oh, good. We can DM.
Natalie Del Conte.
No, it's just kind of cute how you kind of fumble around yourself.
I'm so bad.
Offend me, and I just have to let you know you can't really offend me.
I'm not trying to offend you, though. You understand that. It's just I'm awkward when I'm around women. I'm awkward.
It's a little bit adorable.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you think so. This show brought to you by Squarespace.com, the all-in-one blog website creation platform, online store, too, now with the new Squarespace content. Since they upgraded last fall, almost a year now, they keep rolling out new features, new integrations, new templates. They've got a great 24/7 support team, always available, live chat during the week, extremely fast email support throughout the day or night. Plans start as low as $8 a month for software and hosting. And I'm telling you, the best hosting in the business and the best content management system. And by the way, it sure looks good. They've got an award-winning design team. They're always adding new features, new designs, new templates. They just added that new Momentum template, which is totally gorgeous. The new calendar feature, the events collection, allows you to share schedule updates. If you're a book author, your tour dates, store sales events. If you're a band, your tour dates. Look how gorgeous these are. And the best thing about Squarespace is no two Squarespace sites look alike, because it's so easy to make it look the way you want it to make it feel like you want it to feel. There's the beautiful Momentum site, that full bleed with the dog. Isn't that great? It's just for a photographer or an artist, that would be a great site. Drag and drop means you don't have to be a web guru to get a great looking website. Connections with all the social networks, very easy. Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Google+, LinkedIn, to and fro. And now the e-commerce. Show the pricing, Chad, because this is what blows me away. So, by the way, you click that Get Started button. You can get started today for nothing. You don't need a credit card or even give them any personal information. You get 2 weeks free. When you decide to buy, these are the three plans you'll be looking at: Standard, Unlimited, and Business. Now, Unlimited is kind of the most common plan. When you go month to month, it's $20 a month. If you buy a year plan, it's $16 a month with unlimited pages, unlimited galleries and blogs, unlimited bandwidth. You never get a bandwidth bill if your site gets hot. No problem. Sites do not go down ever on Squarespace either. I think that's a real feature. Unlimited storage. If you want to sell stuff online, add a few bucks, $24 a month, you've got full e-commerce. They'll set you up with a merchant account, so you can take credit cards, unlimited physical or digital products. You can sell records and MP3s, books and e-books. The store looks great on mobile, as all Squarespace sites do. That's just kind of, you get that automatically. But they also throw in things like inventory tracking, tax calculations, so you don't have to worry about where you're selling to.
Tim Cook could use it.
I know. Shipping, coupon controls. It could not be easier. If you are setting up a new website, especially if you want to do commerce, but for whatever reason, just try it. Okay, that's all I ask. Go to squarespace.com, click the Try It Now button, and start playing with it. Import your content. You'll never be trapped. You can export it too. And if you decide to buy, use our offer code TWIT5, TWIT and the number 5, for 10% off your first purchase. That's why the yearly plan really is a good deal. Isn't that nice, that Momentum? And look how good it looks on the iPhone. So it scales automatically from a big screen, you know, 27 inches down to the 4 inches. Works beautifully. Squarespace.com. Pick your Call of Duty dog.
Hmm.
The big cheese. Why do they make such a big deal about a dog?
Well, they're saying the dog is going to factor into the story. Like, you know, the next generation consoles are so real that you'll really care about this dog.
We motion captured a dog.
Yeah, but, you know, for the last Call of Duty game, they motion captured a horse.
Oh, did they?
So, yeah. So
I didn't know that.
Sort of like...
Could you be the horse?
No.
I think you can merely be the dog.
You rode the horse.
The dog...
They haven't said anything about being or not being the dog.
I'd like to be the dog.
Will there be virtual poop all over your environment?
No.
Let's hope, yeah.
There wasn't with the horse.
They were using it to say, like, you know, look at the dog's nose. It has scars on it and all how realistic this dog looks. So, you know, so really just digging the hooks in, telling this story about this great service dog and, you know, naturally... The only way that story can end is that dog either dying or you think it's dead, then it comes running out of the rubble.
No, the dog cannot die. I'm sorry. The dog cannot die or won't be okay with me.
They have...
No, you can kill every human in the game.
Yeah. The dog's the only survivor.
Must survive.
Peter will be all over you if the dog...
Seriously.
Dies. Yeah, seriously.
You can kill everybody. Kill everybody in the game. Kill your friends, kill your foes, kill everybody. Right. The whole world is wiped out. But if that dog, if one hair on that dog is harmed... Forget about it.
What if it ends? What if the final confrontation is dog on dog?
Mm.
Then somebody must win.
Yeah.
No, they'll just go nice.
Two dogs enter,
nice
one
job.
Dog leave.
Let's get out of here.
Right.
Have a beer.
Yeah.
Battlefield's going to have cats.
Yeah. No, yeah. This big old cat helmets, you know,
yeah,
cat launchers, this whole thing.
Yep. So last week, we gathered last week, Yahoo had just bought Tumblr for $1.1 billion. And promised not to screw it up. Now they're bidding big time on Hulu, $500 to $800 million for the troubled, and I have to say, troubled, video service.
Yeah.
It was originally started by Fox, NBC, and Disney was involved, and they couldn't figure out. Now Disney and Fox kind of run it, but they disagree about how it should be run.
Right.
So finally, they said, "Well, let's just sell the damn thing." They're not the only ones trying to buy
Well, if they buy it, I hope they change the business model.
What should it be? That's part of the battle.
Well, first of all, Hulu Plus, if you're going to pay, you don't want to watch ads.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Ads or no ads.
I have a Hulu Plus account, and I hardly ever use it. I'm probably going to get rid of it because, you know, I don't want to pay. I don't mind watching ads if it's free.
It's not a lot of ads.
No, but it's just the principle of ads when you're paying.
The other problem is it's not enough ads. It's the same ad over and over again.
That's my problem. That's the same thing with video on demand. I'll be watching The Office, and it's the same ad for Leno, you know,
over and over again.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that.
Online ad sales.
You'd think they'd be
real
smart.
Mess.
Like, they do some tracking, and they'd find out what you're interested in and vary it up a little bit.
I think they probably just don't close enough deals to...
That's right.
Right.
To fill the... inventory.
So Yahoo, DirecTV, Time Warner Cable, William Morris, Guggenheim Digital, and the Chernin Group, apparently all, according to All Things D, all bidding. Well, there must be some value in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yahoo apparently tried to buy Daily Motion, but the French government said no. So it makes sense. Yahoo's a content company. It was some question when Marissa Meyer joined them that they might just pivot and be more of a services company.
Right.
You be, services or content? Pretty clear now. Content.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It's not about Yahoo Mail. It's about Flickr. It's about sites. It's about Tumblr.
It's social media content, user-supplied content, which, of course, is really cheap. And you know, if they can do the Hulu deal, the idea that they could actually get premium content, and if they improve it, it's not a bad match for them. It works, into their overall strategy. But I don't know. I'm just not blown away by Hulu. So
yeah,
that's the problem.
Not blown away by Yahoo. Like, it's a perfect match in a lot of ways.
I like Yahoo Finance. I
love Yahoo.
There are pockets of greatness in Yahoo. Absolutely.
I think the new Flickr looks great. And a terabyte free storage.
That's really a good deal. Absolutely.
I think that the problem with Hulu is that you had the Murdoch folks who wanted it to be a paywall service.
Yeah.
And you had the Disney folks who wanted to be ad-supported service, and that's why you got this hybrid.
Yeah. They both.
Well, no, you're going to put ads in your paywall.
Worst of both worlds.
Right. Yeah. So you get the worst of both worlds. But so this is why it's good they're being sold.
Yeah.
Because you got to acknowledge there's some value to for a cord cutter to Hulu Plus, because now I can see same week television shows.
Yep. Yeah, but once it gets separated from the actual content creators, you know, what's their incentive? What keeps them from just saying, like, forget it, we're just going to go launch our own service?
Well, that's why they're getting
the way
so
we
much,
want to run it.
That's why they're asking for $2 billion, which they're not going to get. They're saying, well, for $2 billion, we'll give you a long-term deal on the content.
Okay.
We'll
if they can keep the content deals, that's the problem.
Right, right. Yeah.
You know, once they're cut off from NBC and Fox and everybody.
I just canceled my Netflix.
Really? I love Netflix.
I never use it.
Oh, you're not an Arrested Development fan.
Arrested Development started.
House of Cards. You know, old funky movies and TV shows that you
House
forgot
of Cards
about.
is worth $7.99
And watch the British version of House of Cards. It's
great.
Terrific.
Love it.
It feels like every single time I want to watch something specific, it's never what it's for.
It's for serendipity. It's for late at night.
It's for crap you would never want to watch.
Exactly. When Annette Funicello died, I watched all of her movies on Netflix. I wouldn't pay a nickel. I mean, I loved Annette Funicello, but I wouldn't pay a nickel to watch her movies. But I watched them that day, you know, in reverence to her. And just, you know.
Do you know who Annette Funicello is, Natalie?
Yes, I love her.
Oh, Back good.
To the Beach is one of my favorite movies ever.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So are you all excited? Have you been watching Arrested Development? Are you going to watch it tonight?
I intend to. But, you know, also Netflix and Hulu are really trying to innovate when it comes to kids channels.
Yes.
And we use that a lot. And so for someone, you know, who doesn't have kids, it may not feel so great to have access to Annette Funicello movies. But when you're out and about and you can just open your Netflix app and hand your kid Bob the Builder, that's definitely.
Yeah. And you have a lot more control. I mean, that's what I like about it from a kid's standpoint.
Yeah, that too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're in a golden age for kids who need to be distracted or babysat by a screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You should do that. Let's not start that again.
Here, kid, watch Phineas and Ferb for another 4 hours.
I mean, I had to grow up watching Revenge of the Nerds, and that had full frontal nudity in it.
Mommy has to have her sleep time.
So do we get the segue into this?
Yeah, we'll talk about SafeKids.com because it is the 20th anniversary of the original child safety pamphlet. Did you write the first one?
So, yeah, 20 years ago, I wrote a booklet called Child Safety on the Information Highway for the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
20 years ago was 1993.
It actually was published in 94.
Was there an information superhighway?
Al Gore declared the information superhighway.
Very few people were using the internet publicly, though.
Very few people were using it back then.
And safety, did they even mean anything then?
Oh, sure, because we were worried about porn. We wrote about predators.
But it wasn't there yet.
No, but we were worried about it.
You were preparing.
So I wrote a booklet. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, which I'm still on the board of, commissioned me to write a booklet. I wrote it 20 years ago. And so they stopped publishing it in 2005. I kept updating it. But I put it on safekids.com. And just the other day, I was looking at my traffic figures, and I said, oh, my God, people are coming to this page.
Yeah.
A lot of people. And I was embarrassed by it because it was 20 years old.
Well, what did it say? Things like, if your modem is...
pull the modem out of the wall to protect children.
If your child is online at 300 baud...
You know, we worried about... We talked about news groups and chat
news
rooms.
Groups, yeah.
And we talked
chat
about...
Chat rooms, yeah.
We talked about how the World Wide Web had newspapers and how wonderful it was and all the things you could do. So I actually spent the last several days rewriting it from scratch. Still kept the same name. It's now called the 20th Anniversary Edition. But I rewrote it because,
you.
I mean, the world has changed. We have apps. I mean, Natalie, you know this very well. We've got a completely new world. We have user-supplied content. Now kids are creating the kind of porn that we were warning them against looking at. Now
they're
have to worry about them making it. I'm just kidding about that. Sexting is way overblown. But just all the things that parents need to think about today, not 20 years ago. And unfortunately, these old messages, which I wrote 20 years ago, are still the basis for a lot of internet safety information today. And it's awful. So to segue to another thing,
but you did take out the warning about the sharp edges on the AOL discs.
I took that out. But
thank you, Strike It Rich.
But the other thing is that we formed a nonprofit a few years ago, you know, called ConnectSafely.org, trying to really tap into the whole Web 2.0 or what we call Online Safety 3.0 to realize that safety is no longer about protecting kids. It's no longer about bubble wrapping kids. It's about digital literacy. It's about the kinds of things we've been talking about all day.
Yeah.
And so our latest creations are these two parents' guides to Instagram and Snapchat. And, you know, you can be paranoid about Snapchat. Yeah, can you use it to take nasty pictures? Of course you can. But the reality
is they're not really using it that much.
No, they're not using it
I signed up for Snapchat, and I have not yet gotten any nude, despite soliciting multiple
times. That's the problem, I know.
No one has sent me in.
Well, the point.
I keep sending them out.
Here, please,
you
know, stop.
You can try to. You can try
I'm
to.
I'm tired of getting those. Jeff, you just got to stop. Yeah, when they say giant bomb, they mean it.
Well, you know.
It's been very disappointing, I know. But the fact that kids use it for wacky stuff. So you have a bad hair day, you take a picture, it goes away in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Can you capture the screen? Absolutely.
Well, is now we know that, in fact, in the cache, it kind of lives
yeah,
on.
But somebody has to have physical access to the phone. They have to have expensive forensics tools. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, who would have that besides, I don't know, the police?
Oh, the police would, but your friend Billy probably doesn't.
Right.
So in the guide, we talk about just common sense things that parents need to know about. We explain what Snapchat is. We explain what Instagram is. We provide people with just some basic information. We try to calm fears because there's so much paranoia and so much fear about every new piece of technology. And, you know, you guys, we've been around long enough. Technology comes, technology goes. Things change. People are people. And if you understand basic principles about protecting your privacy, not saying stupid things on the internet, not taking stupid pictures of yourself, whether it's in Instagram or Snapchat or Facebook, you're going to be okay. So if you go to connectsafely.org or safekids.com, you can find access to all that stuff. And, you know, check it out.
So, and apparently, adult fear on Tumblr accounts for 11.4% of the
kinda low.
Top 200,000 domains. I thought it was much higher. It's almost all of my top.
It's not that much. And that's the thing. And the same thing with Snapchat. It turns out that somebody actually did a study, and the amount of, you know, nude pictures on Snapchat is actually less than people send by text messages.
Yeah.
It's not that big a deal.
Kids are not that interested in sex.
Well, that's actually too bad.
They're really, it's funny. You know, my son who's 18, all his friends, they just kind of hang around.
Uh-oh.
You want to talk about what technology is ruining? It's ruining the ability for people to ask each other out on
dates. They don't even date anymore. No.
That actually does bother me.
It's weird. They go out in groups.
My 26-year-old son does have a girlfriend. Very normal relationship. So.
Henry went to the prom. He had a date, but it feels like they don't really date anymore. They kind of do group events.
Yeah, I don't know
stuff.
If that's
it's
a technology thing, or maybe that's just a bubble wrap parenting that we all had when they were little. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You guys helicopter?
There
things?
Was an article in the journal over the summer that talked about how they're not even really that interested in cars because they can interact.
Right.
Yep.
With each other, they can walk to wherever they're going.
Henry did not get his driver's license until a full two and a half years after he was eligible for it.
He didn't necessarily want it?
Didn't care. Didn't want it.
And the auto industry is very worried about that. That's a real issue for them. Like, how are they going to get...
But my daughter, who's only a few years older, like, the minute she could take the license test, she did.
Same with mine.
A couple of years later, it's like, nah, whatever.
Exactly the same. My son waited until he needed a car.
I was dying to get my driver's license and then spent about 3 months driving, promptly totaled a car, and then was fine.
All appropriate.
I'm waiting for my Google self-driving car so I can stop driving.
Hey, let's see. Tom Merritt's here. We're going to find out what's coming up in the week ahead. What will we be looking for, Tom?
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's a look at some of the stories we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead on Tech News Today. Of course, today, Arrested Development comes to Netflix. Also coming up Tuesday, May 28th, D11 kicks off. That's All Things D's conference, and Fuse is set to launch. Wednesday, May 29th, the Sony Entertainment Network online store launches in Japan. Saturday, June 1st, the White House announced it will be a National Day of Civic Hacking. GameStop will no longer accept PS2 trade-ins of any kind, including games, accessories, or systems. So get your PS2s traded in before Saturday. And on June 1st, edX will release the entire source code for its online learning platform. That's a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
Previously on TWiT, TWiT Live Specials.
Welcome to our TWiT Live Special number 158, the Microsoft Xbox reveal. And we're seeing the hardware right away.
Yeah, right.
It looks like a DVR.
It is the set-top box.
It's kind of square.
Yeah.
No Xbox Infinity. It's one. It does look like a home entertainment unit or something, a component that
looks
might fit into it.
Grown up. It looks like the Xbox in a business suit. Yeah.
This Week in Google.
Who is Matt Cutts?
Matthew Cutts works for the search quality team in Google, working on search engine optimization.
Whoa, mind blown.
All about Android.
So, walking?
Oh, my God. That's so cool. Look at that.
So it changes perspective.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's not an Easter egg. It's just what navigation mode are you in? If you're
that's
in.
That's freaky. Oh,
I got to get one of these.
I think that Easter egg.
TWiT, we love you.
Ooh, we're putting a little social stuff on there now. That's cool. Yeah, he was just blown away by the Google Glass. Ron Richards from All About Android. Couldn't believe it. Holy cow.
And that's why I almost want to go get one.
Well, you should play with it. Come over here, play with it. We'll let you play with Jason. Everybody should play with it for half an hour. And then I think once you do it for, it doesn't take long.
Mm-hmm.
You get it, you go, okay, I got it.
I would never wear this full time, but it's kind of neat.
Unless you're Robert Scoble.
Right. Yeah.
To me, it's like you wear it for a while. It's gimmicky. It's cool. But it's not something you want to wear all the time.
Sure.
Ever.
But that's the whole idea of it, though, right?
Well, eventually they'll need to do that, I guess.
That's the whole concept behind it.
I guess.
That'll never. We'll probably never be at a point where that is socially acceptable. Right? I mean, that's...
Who knows?
Again, it just comes back... I always take it back to the...
contact lens? I mean, you were talking about... That actually would be practical,
That'd be...
You could do that.
Way better. Stealth is going to be key with that stuff, I think. Because Bluetooth headset is still totally unacceptable.
But isn't it... Don't we all understand anyway that when you're out in public, you're basically in public, that there are cameras everywhere anyway?
Apparently not.
Right, yeah. It's for me, it's less the privacy thing and more just straight up the fashion
thing.
Look
what happened to Romney, right, with the 47%.
Right.
The guy had a cell phone.
And that was a private event.
Right,
even
that cost
then.
Him a lot of votes.
Yeah. Assume you're being recorded at all times.
That's how I live my life.
I just ordered a Momoto camera. That little, I think it's a Swedish company. So they're making this. It's a camera every 30 seconds. It was Gordon Bell of VedTech who came up with this originally. He even wrote a book about it.
You can buy that now.
You can buy one. And I ordered it, $250. He takes a picture every 30 seconds, uploads it to their server.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a live stream.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you would want to share it, but
you
have.
What do with all that? But see, then you need really smart software, and Google can do
precisely
that to make sense of it.
Analyze it.
I can't even make sense of my own photo collection. I don't have.
Yeah, I mean, we just do a lot of live streaming around video games primarily, but you know, increasingly it's been a lot of like taking questions and doing stuff like this where for a while there that became the most prominent use of my iPhone was just straight up streaming out to Justin TV while we were commuting to and from work, like San Francisco. So
that sounds just fascinating.
Turning that into a lot. Well, you turn it into a live show. You start taking questions, stuff like that. It ends up. It's not quite.
So broadcasting,
hey, look at this
while
road.
Driving, is that legal in this state?
Well, I commute with someone, so we can switch off. So it's not. It is usually not me holding the wheel and the phone at the same time.
Man, I would have loved it had I had this thing when the kids were growing up. I mean, Natalie, would you consider wearing a camera all day so that you could go back and look at what the kids were doing when they were 2 and 3 and 4?
Maybe. Even now, I sort of look back through videos when they were really tiny and get all weepy about it. But
Just wait.
I know.
The weeping is just beginning.
Mine are all on 8mm.
I look at Henry's baby book and I burst into tears.
But there's so much of them. Their lives are so well documented.
Right.
And I think there was an article in the Times recently about how too much documentation of someone's life just cheapens it. And they're not going to have this. Like, I can think back like, oh, there was a really cute picture of my sister and I in the pool doing this thing once. Like, I can remember one great picture. And I don't know if they're going to have that.
You know what's interesting, Natalie? When my kids were little, we had the 8mm cameras. And you had like a 2-hour tape in there. So we would go. We would tape like for a half an hour at a time.
And those tapes
were awful.
You don't want those.
I like the fact that people are doing 10, 20, 30 second, 2 minutes maximum on their phone.
Right.
I think it's a lot more useful than these epics that we recorded.
But this is a different idea. So they're geotagged. So it gives you a track of what you're doing. It's waterproof, 2 days battery life. Mm-hmm. So the idea, and then you're absolutely right. It kind of presupposes that down the road we'll have some sort of intelligence we can apply to this massive database. Facial recognition, for instance. Give me all the pictures of Meemaw before she passed away, and I'd like to look at that as a live stream. I think that there's going to be value in there. But look at what Google's doing with photos on Google Plus now.
They're animating them.
They're animating them.
Yeah.
They're doing recognition. They're tagging them. I think we're just entering this age where software is going to be used in this way.
So Petaluma flooded in 1982 when I was, I guess I would have been 6 or 7. And we lost. There are no pictures of me from prior to that. They were all lost in the flood.
Oh, that's terrible.
So,
you didn't have cloud backup back then?
Yeah, no. The cloud was really unreliable back then.
All of your baby pictures were lost.
Baby pictures, my parents' wedding photos, like all that stuff, just history, smoked. So,
see, that won't happen in the future. You'll have cloud backup.
Yeah.
Somebody said, I'm going to find this because I've quoted him a couple of times now. History began with digital photography. That in effect, we don't know anything about the past, but from now on, historians will have an infinite supply of material.
It's just all EXIF data now.
Yeah.
Well, we know highlights of the past, right? We even have photographs of Abraham Lincoln. We have somebody just came out with a beautiful collection of photographs from New York 100 years ago.
Love
that
those.
I saw
I've been
online.
Looking at those. Yeah.
There were some gorgeous pictures, but they were very special. They were expensive to take and process. And in some ways, I like that. I like the fact that pictures were expensive because they took fewer of them. And
they mattered.
More care into them. And they mattered. Now we're just flooded with photographs. So how do we take all of those thousands of digital photographs that we're all taking and get the gems? I mean, I was in Africa, Kenya, did a safari a few years ago, and I took maybe 1,000 pictures. There were two that were worth printing.
But isn't this what Google is – isn't this what they promised at Google I.O.?
Yeah, they did.
You know, we're going to take your pictures. We will algorithmically determine what the best pictures are, surface them for you, highlight them, make them big. You don't believe it?
Well, I've looked – I mean, maybe. Maybe. They can make them better, but could they have found that those two pictures that I picked for my Kenya trip? I doubt it.
And what if I'm the type of idiot that really loves bad photos?
Well, you're just going to have to get out of that.
Actually,
I get a lot of bad photos of you all of a sudden.
You know, actually, I think
badass photos. You know, what?
Now this is kind of interesting because I took the Zoe of you. So this is a video, a 3-second video from the HTC One of you and Natalie. That's all there is. But Google also noted that I had a bunch of sequential images and turned it into an animated GIF. So now there's an animated GIF of you as well. That's not as smooth as the video, but I think that's kind of
this 3-second thing is interesting. But what if it was 6? Huh?
Then it's a Vine.
Yeah, then it's a Vine.
By the way, Jeff Needles did a great thing. He just built the Death Star, and he's completed it now. And we have a time lapse. We don't have it yet, but we will have a time lapse of him building this 3,800-piece Lego. Are you? Your kids are too young to be into Lego, right?
You
know, there it is.
Do you really want pictures of yourself
looking
goofy, drinking a glass?
Why do you think I do that on TV?
Yeah, I don't know.
So isn't that cool? Natalie, do you do Lego yet with your kids?
Yeah, like Legos.
There's an example of a great kid toy, a creative kid toy.
Yeah.
In fact, in some ways, I bemoan the fact that you buy this kit and it's the Death Star because there's no creativity in that. Because you should just build your own Death Star. And it'd be really cool if it were active. We're operational.
Yeah.
Yeah. So kids, get on that. Let me do one more commercial. We'll wrap it up. How about that? I bet everybody's tired and ready to go home. What do you think? If you're in the IT business, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about. It's a job that never ends. But if you have the right tools, you can go home and still get the job done. I'm talking about GoToAssist, the ultimate package for IT professionals because, of course, the remote package lets you solve problems remotely from an iPad, from an iPhone. It also lets you track the problems. You can even see the problems before they occur. I want you to visit GoToAssist.com and find out more about this great service from Citrix. If you'd like to become a managed service provider, this is the way to do it. I think everybody in the business knows about remote support. They have unattended support. You can do up to 8 sessions at once. You could find out what software is running on the computer and all of that. They've added 2 new modules to GoToAssist that make it a full cloud-based tool set. They've got the service desk, which lets you easily manage, track, and resolve issues. They've got and it's a really nice service portal that's self-branded, so people can go and report their issues. But the monitoring, this is what really turns me on. We put it on our network. It was pretty cool. It goes out and it finds everything on the network, not just the hardware, but all the software on the network as well. And then you can build these dashboards. They've got pre-configured modules, or you can create your own, that will alert you when there's a problem. You know, network bandwidth down, the server down, even things like the toner cartridge running low. You'll get an instant message or a text or an email. You set it up exactly the way you want it so you can be proactive. You can solve the problems before they become big problems, and it makes you a support hero. I think you ought to try this. You could do it for free, all 3 modules, 30 days at GoToAssist.com. Just use our offer code TWIT. If you're in the IT business, this is a tool you have been waiting for and a lot less expensive than many of the tools that are out there today. GoToAssist.com. Use the offer code TWIT today. Well, I think we can wrap this up. Natalie Morris, it's been so great having you on the show today.
Yeah.
Marvy.
Thank you. Next time I'll bring more soapboxes.
I think the chat room, I was watching the chat room react to you, and they said, let's hear more, mindfulness, what about that? I think we are all kind of feeling a little disjointed in this modern world.
Follow me on Goodreads. I read a lot about this, and I don't necessarily have my own thoughts about this, but I synthesize it a lot, and it's just something that's fascinating to me for no commercial gain, just because I like to. So follow me on Crash Test Mom, subscribe on YouTube, and follow me on Goodreads.
What's your Goodreads handle?
I think I'm just Natalie Morris or right. Natalie. I had it when I was Del Conte. So let's see. Am I Natalie Morris?
I'm also on Goodreads. You know what? I really am looking forward to Amazon bought them about a month ago, and I really want it somehow to integrate with my Amazon. They bought Shelfari and never did any integration, but I really want them to do some integration because I buy most of my books on Amazon. It'd be nice if it just kind of filled that in automatically.
I'm sure they will.
Yeah,
it is just Natalie Morris, all one word, like my Twitter handle.
Good. I will follow you. I like Goodreads. For people who like to read, there it is. That's what Natalie's currently reading.
Yep. She has
Destiny
no
of Souls, New Case Studies of Life Between Lives. Ooh, what do you think?
Ooh, that's fun.
Sugar,
that's really fun.
Salt, fat. How the food giants hooked us. You know, there was a great article in the Times a couple of Sundays ago about that. Mm-hmm. I guess this is the full-length version of that.
Yeah.
Jobs.
Of course.
Yeah. At Home, a short history of private life. That's great stuff. I love that.
I just marked on intelligence, too, to
good.
Read
good
in my
good.
Two reads.
Awesome. Good reads, Natalie Morris, and, of course, Crash Test Mommy?
Crash Test Mom.
Mom.com. CrashTestMom.com. Give our regards to Clayton.
Thank you. I will. Thanks for having me. It was nice
always
spending
nice
this
to have you.
Holiday with you guys.
Thank you. Happy. You don't say happy Memorial. It's not a happy day. Memorial Day.
Hey, Memorial Day.
Be joyous. Like,
not
like
joyous because it's commemoration of men and women of our armed forces who've given their lives in the service of the country.
Have a respectful Memorial Day.
Have a respectful Memorial Day.
Have a present
thank you,
Memorial Day.
And enjoy the barbecue.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Thank you for passing up on the barbecue this week.
Oh, I partook.
Oh, good. She said before the show, I had a little sangria too, but it was not in evidence.
Oh.
Except maybe you're flushed, a little flushed.
Well, no, it probably gave me a bit more, I was a bit more mouthy.
Maybe you should serve sangria on the set here.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Thanks to Jeff Gerstmann, too, from Giant Bomb Media, giantbomb.com. Yeah. Anything you want to plug? What are you doing these days? You're doing a lot stuff on Justin.
We are on Twitch TV all over the place.
Do you do doing, so you do what games are do you doing on Twitch TV?
We basically rotate through what's new. You know, a lot of people try to focus on one game, nonstop Minecraft streams, but we're out there doing whatever's
I just
hot
finished,
and a lot of old stuff.
I just finished Infinity, BioShock Infinity.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Hell of a game.
What do you recommend next for me?
Oh, coming off
I'm waiting
BioShock.
For Watch Dogs. I cannot wait till Watch Dogs.
Yes.
But that's not till this fall.
Yeah, that'll be a little bit
wait.
Now.
That's going to be awesome.
You know, what do you think about Grand Theft Auto?
No, not a GTA fan.
GTA 5 is looking pretty good from what they showed.
Yeah, I don't want to beat up hookers. I don't want to carjack.
Well, they never make a mission, but you're just perpetuating the stereotype, man. There's no mission in that game. Beat up a hooker.
Anything else you got?
You can find me on Twitter on the screen there. You can go to jeffgerstmann.net. That'll get you at my Tumblr, taking some questions over there.
That Tumblr has that great Ask Me Anything feature.
So
I
abandoned Formspring because they kept losing my settings, and then it turned out they were shutting down or not shutting down, I guess, and ended up picking Tumblr as a replacement for that.
If I click Ask Me Anything on my Tumblr, then do I say, hey, okay, here, I'm Leo, ask me anything? Is that what I do?
More or less, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you
I
can
like that.
Submit,
I did one on Reddit. It was
very,
fun. It was really fun.
Yeah. So that sort of stuff, you know, just getting out there doing video games and working on T-shirts and card games and all kinds of stuff like that.
Card games?
Yeah. We are working on a video game-themed expansion. So it's going to happen after E3. We've been taking submissions for it for a very long time. Working on a video game-themed expansion for Cards Against Humanity. Which should be pretty cool. So we're excited about that.
We played that once on the air and regretted it bitterly.
Just once. That's what CBS gives us the cover. We've played it two or three times on the air. And no one's
really CBS didn't complain, huh?
It's when you fly under the radar like that.
Yeah, they don't know. That's why exactly. Yeah. It's great to have you, Jeff. You're just around the corner. Please come by anytime. We'd love having you here.
Great to hear.
You just want to borrow a cup of Wi-Fi, you're welcome. Larry Magid is on CBS Radio all the time, pretty much daily. What else are you doing these days?
Well, you can reach me on Larry's World. You can find me on Twitter, at Larry Magid. There we go. And you see the other site, Safe Kids and Connect Safely. I'm doing a lot of work.
I'm glad
on,
you did that.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of work in there. And I'm doing the daily show now for CBS called Tech Talk, which you can find online on iTunes and the normal places. So enjoying writing. And also I'm starting writing for Forbes Magazine or Forbes.com.
Forbes.com.
You can find me on Forbes as well.
Awesome.
Yeah,
fabulous. Yeah. Great to have you all, too. Thank you for joining us. I know it's a long time to spend on a Sunday afternoon. We're really glad you could be here. For those of you who watched live, we do the show 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC on twit.tv. But if you can't watch live, you know you can always get audio and video. No stigma. It's okay. I understand. We make on-demand versions available just for that reason at twit.tv or wherever, you know, they aggregate and offer for download finer shows like this, like iTunes and the Zoom Pass and all of that stuff. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next week. Another twit.
This is amazing.
Yay. Yay.